This meeting will come to order, please. The clerk will note the roll, please. And in our audience today, we have some visiting students from Winona. Some of them are part of Representative Pawlowski's Advanced Placement Government class. And so starting in the back row, will you stand and say your name and something good about Representative Pawlowski? Because he is a favorite of mine. And so, you know, if you're going to please the chair, I want to hear only good things about Representative Pawlowski. Go ahead, sir.
I'm Jeff Schroepfer, and Mr. Pawlowski has a very strong neck.
Thank you. That's excellent. Yes, doesn't he though? Swings an awesome glove too.
I'm Jamie Legowski, and he talks a lot in monologues.
My name is Alex Sear, and Mr. Pawlowski is a great innovator in implementing technology in the classroom.
Yay!
Yes. Well, thank you very much, students, for being here. You indeed have an excellent teacher, Mr. Pawlowski, and he does know how to use a variety of tools to meet all of your needs. So keep in mind that he is probably one in a thousand when it comes to teaching high school students an advanced placement course. And you have such a great curriculum, too, so he has many opportunities. The clerk has taken the roll, and let's see. Mr. Benson, Representative Benson, would you move the minutes from January 31, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the minutes for February 9th.
Representative Benson moves the minutes from January 31. Is there any discussion, corrections, additions? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the minutes from January 31 are adopted. Oh, my goodness, I guess I have January 26th minutes, too. Representative Murdoch, have you reviewed those?
Yes, Madam Chair, I have.
Representative Murdoch moves the minutes of January 26th. Is there any discussion, additions, or corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the minutes from January 26th are adopted as well. Members, if you're planning to attend the reading conference at Oak Grove Academy, just a reminder that it's a week from Friday. If you've not called to reserve a spot, there is no charge for you, and I know they look forward to at least your coming to hear the presenter. She's an outstanding presenter when it comes to the technicalities in teaching reading, which, of course, is very important to us. Today, members, we continue with our discussion surrounding House File 1870. As you recall, it was laid over at the last meeting so that we could have more time for discussion. Let's keep in mind that as we bring up our questions, that we want to enact policy that will increase learning, raise achievement, improve teaching, and empower parents. And so with that, Representative Peterson, would you come forward, please, and offer your amended 1870 as we left it on the 31st, and present us with a motion for where it will go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to amend the motion on the referral to Education Finance and change that to referral to the General Register.
So we have before us, members, House File 1870 as amended presently with a change in direction, and it will go to the floor. Thank you, Representative Peterson. Will you go ahead and present 1870 as amended? I believe you have some other amendments.
Yes, Madam Chair. I have six amendments, actually. The first three amendments, I worked with Representative Benson on, and I'll be offering those. Every one of them is a good amendment. The A2 amendment I'll start with.
The Representative A2 Peterson offers the A2 amendment. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the adoption of the A2 signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Proceed to explain A2.
What A2 does is move back the effectiveness date of full-blown implementation of the replacement of the seniority mandate by 1 year, and that's in consideration of the 3-year evaluation cycle that is in current law and the possibility that the teacher evaluation work group may decide to make the summative evaluation in the third year. That's within their discretion, and therefore we would have potentially the first round of ULA's layoffs be based not on anything related to student performance, but administrator review. So that's just to make sure that that doesn't happen. And that's the explanation of the A2.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Let's go on to the next amendment.
I'd like to move the A15 amendment.
Representative Greiling, did you have a question? I'm sorry.
No, I don't, Madam Chair, but I'm a little confused that we're adopting amendments and then explaining them and then going on to the next amendment.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'll reverse that.
Thank you. And so for this one then, as long as we got it backwards, could I comment?
Absolutely. Go ahead. You wanted to comment in the A2.
I do, Madam
please,
Chair.
Please, go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, and Representative Peterson, I think that you are addressing one of the criticisms that we kind of have the cart before the horse here with the teacher evaluation just barely underway, a couple of meetings, and no consensus in sight yet, nor should there be because they've just started. And then now we're waiting even longer on implementing this. But to me, that it looks like it's window dressing to address the concern. But I think, in fact, it just strengthens the argument that your legislation here today is premature. When, there's plenty of time, years, between when we get the teacher evaluation right and doing this. And the very discussion of this coming, which I think that is appropriate, is enough to have local units of government, the school districts, working hard on their own model. I think that's a good thing. But to actually have this in law ahead of time, I think you weaken your argument by pushing it out even farther while trying to address that issue.
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling. I believe we're going to sufficiently beat this particular horse to death here today in committee. I think that I'm not going to address everything that you said there. I'll just say that these are author's amendments that were worked on in collaboration with members on your side of the committee. There is very substantive reasons as to why we would delay it. Like I said, there's a 3-year evaluation cycle. We want to make sure we're not making ill-informed decisions. And I'll leave the rest of your comment till later in the committee when I'm sure it will be brought up again numerous times.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson, I don't disagree with what you said, but it was the other part of my comments that are my criticisms of this.
Okay.
Representative Peterson.
We can get into this now before we get through the author's amendments, I suppose. The teacher evaluation outcome, whatever it is, whatever the teacher evaluation working group ends up coming up with, in every single case, the seniority mandate will undermine and deem irrelevant informed decision-making when it comes to personnel practices. It is an entirely incompatible piece of statute with saying that you're going to make informed personnel decisions using the evaluation law that, by the way, is state law. So if if that's the case, then why would you implement a statewide reform of this particular piece of statute, knowing full well that a current piece of statute undermines and deems irrelevant that particular piece of statute and one of the most critical personnel decisions a teacher may face in their career? That would be my argument, and I would also say that the effectiveness date is pushed out in recognition, obviously, that the effect teacher evaluation law will not take effect until 14-15. So that's my rebuttal to your statement. If we want to keep going, I'd like to finish the author's amendments at least. I think we'll have the entire hearing today to talk about some of your concerns and others, I'm sure.
Thank you, Representative Greiling, and thank you, Representative Peterson. Would you offer your next amendment, please?
Yeah, I'd like to offer the A-15 amendment.
Representative Peterson offers the A-15 amendment. Is there any discussion?
Well, Madam Chair,
I can go through what the A-15 amendment does. And
please explain your amendment, and then we'll have the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What the amendment does is simply, under the current situation, ULA layoffs are often published to the school district because there's no personnel data that's included, with the exception of seniority. I'm going to shut my phone off here real quick. And with personnel data being included as it relates to performance, we certainly don't want to make that information public, and so this particular amendment would make that private.
Now is there discussion, Representative Dabney?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, I appreciate the value of privacy around personnel issues. That's a long-standing issue or value. One of the issues that's been brought up in relation to your legislation is right now, if there is a reduction in the number of students and layoffs ensue, the layoffs are done by seniority. The seniority list, when I was teaching, was posted in the staff room in the fall, and you made sure that I had one more year than Representative Tilbury, and I made sure that he was down the list a little further than me, and it was public and it was clear. And then if layoffs came, Tom got the layoff notice and I kept my job. Under your bill currently, maybe I get laid off, maybe he gets laid off. It's based on evaluations. How do I know that his evaluations actually were superior to mine without having to litigate it and put both me in the position of finding lawyers and the school district in the position of significant liability for litigation, if they're kept private?
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I think the situation that you just pointed out is not, you know, all too unfamiliar to districts currently in as it relates to performance management and personnel decisions. The teacher, as you know, has the right to grievance under current statute, and we're actually going to talk about an amendment that I have later on here that we'll get into how the teacher can access that information through due process. So right. If we can get to that, and if you don't mind.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? All those in favor of adoption of the A-15 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. The A-15 amendment is adopted. Representative Peterson, your next amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A-16 amendment.
Representative Peterson moves the A-16 amendment. Please explain it.
The A-16 amendment is a change that was made. Actually, I believe Representative Kath got into the weeds on this issue at the tail end of the last hearing as it relates to the language relating to realignment of staff in order to accommodate the seniority claims of another teacher. If you remember, we had the kindergarten, then 1 through 6, then junior high, then senior high silos, if you will, and this eliminates those prescriptive distinctions in favor of simply K through 6 and 7 through 12.
Discussion. Representative Peterson.
If the license is K through 6, I'm sorry, Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, does this say then that the K through 6 or K through 12 then would be in place?
Representative Peterson. What this says is that it wouldn't be deemed a substantially different grade level assignment within those ranges. So a K through a teacher going from 6 to two would not be considered substantially different as it relates to this statute. Now, what I will say is that licensure still applies and overrules this. So this is slightly more liberal, as I understand it, small L liberal, of course, as I understand it, than licensure is, and that's fine. You know, licensure will overrule the...
Representative Peterson, Sandra.
Madam Chair, well, I'm glad to hear that licensure is the criteria. It doesn't really say that on here. There are teachers who, many in various licensures, who have K through 12 licenses. It could be music. It can be special ed. There are places where, and this, I don't know if this addresses that.
Representative Peterson.
And then, so that gets back to, Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, that gets back to the discussion that we had again at the tail end of the last conversation, which is that this does not restrict the district from making that decision in conjunction with the teacher. It simply says that the district cannot be forced to make that distinction in order to accommodate the seniority claims of another teacher, if that makes any sense. In the instances of unrequested leave, in a very narrow band of decision-making, that's where that would apply.
Representative Peterson.
Representative, Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, I'm having a hard time following this. If I'm hearing you say that licensure has to be the dominant piece here. It has to be the criteria. If that's true, it probably should say that. I don't know if this does. I would like to hear that licensure is, because when you have a license, it says you have a license to teach these particular grades in this particular area. And I think that's where we want to stay with that. We don't want to start cutting apart. And if that is true, then we're going to have to change our licensure processes, it seems to me, over at the department. So
I think I understand what you're saying. You're saying that
Representative Peterson,
in this instance, if someone was licensed K through 12,
right,
you feel like that person ought to be able to go K through 12,
right,
appropriately. Madam Chair, it's at your discretion. I would accept an oral amendment if Lisa could help put that in place. I think the point is that you know, we want qualified teachers, and we don't want to take people out of areas that they, you know, aren't qualified to teach in. That's fine. I don't think it changes the heart of the, you know, the bill.
Ms. Larson, are you ready with some language, or should we come back to you? So let's lay this amendment over until Ms. Larson can get some language together and can check with Representative Sandra Peterson to ensure
Thank
that it meets, because you raised really good questions, Representative Sandra Peterson.
Did I get at the kind of the heart of what you're talking about there?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, you did.
Okay.
You did.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. So let's just put the A16 aside, and let's go on to the next amendment, Representative Peterson Brandon.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A-17 amendment.
Representative Brandon Peterson moves the A-17 amendment. Please explain.
What the A-17 amendment does is simply say that a teacher's effectiveness category underlying data, and you can just read it, the individual teacher-generated data under the teacher evaluation process used to determine a teacher's effectiveness category for purposes of the subdivision or private data on individuals. It's just amending the various appropriate areas of statute
data
to
privacy.
Make sure that
yes.
that happens.
Discussion, Representative Kaff.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Peterson. Do you know then if this goes into place and where it says it's private data on individuals, how would the grievance process work then? Like if you were to say that, you know, I noticed that Mr. Johnson got laid off and I didn't, and now he's grieving that, and he's grieving it towards me, for instance, because I've got less seniority, less seniority than him, and I got to stay, so clearly he's kind of questioning, if that's the third backup or the backstop, why I'm staying and he's not. How would that work then if the data is private on individuals? Who would have the ability to look at it? Would it be just the superintendent? Would it be the school board? At what point in time would the courts then open up those evaluations? I guess I'm looking at that from the context of, you know, would this then need to go to, you know, a committee on civil law of looking at, you know, how does data privacy work here? Because I have no clue how this would function.
Representative Peterson Brandon.
Madam Chair, Representative Kath. While we're not going to get in and prescribe the intricacies of the personnel, exactly how they're going to handle the personnel data, individuals who are responsible for the performance management process, the administrators, are going to have access to this. And it's not all too different than a teacher appealing maybe a discharge on the grounds of inefficiency in teaching. They have the right under statute to get all of the information as it pertains to that decision. And as far as the Civil Law Committee goes, that would be at the discretion of the chair of that committee. I haven't heard anything from him as it relates to that. And based on House File 945 last year, I don't expect a referral because there were some similar provisions in that.
Just to follow up, Madam Chair, I guess this is very different than the current process, because the current process, if you grieve it, it's only about you. You know, that you're not comparing one personnel file to another personnel file. It's just my personnel file. And so it is data privacy, and it's not a comparison. Now you're looking at pulling other people into this and other people's personnel files. And if I'm not incorrect, currently under statute, if I don't like something in my personnel file, I actually have, as a teacher, a grievance process that I can go by to remove things from my personnel file. And I think we're going to see a ton of that happen under this, because let's say that I'm in my first, and I'm just giving hypotheticals here because I think this is something that could occur, is that if I don't like something in it now, and I know that over, you know, I'm going to get some summative evaluations and things like that, but overall, gosh, I want my effectiveness rating to look good, I can grieve even before some of those evaluations to remove some of those things from my personnel file and expunge them. And I guess I'm not, I don't know how this would work or what this would look like, because that's already in another section of law under evaluation, you know, or of how your personnel file works. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm just trying to look to see that we're not doing something that would then really expose districts to a lot of lawsuits that's greater than the impact that currently, like you've already stated, is in place.
Representative Brandon Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Caff. I mean, I suppose we could sit in committee today and speculate on the amount of appeals that go into the process. I mean, if you want my opinion for what it's worth, I believe the current evaluation law is going to come under plenty of scrutiny as well, regardless of the outcome of the teacher evaluation working group. We amend the statute, the current statute, as it relates to the grievance process, and we cite that in the bill here today. So with all of those things considered, management will have to figure out a way to have maybe a nondescript marker of a teacher or something like that. Like I said, I don't think it's necessarily for the committee to prescribe how it is private. I think we just have to prescribe that by law it is private. And I think we have to leave it to some degree to the local management to make the detailed decisions as it relates to that inside of the framework of current law.
And just a very quick, it's not a question, just a comment. I guess I would, if there's, and Madam Chair, I don't know if there's somebody, I don't know if Lisa can, you know, speak to this, or if there's somebody here that could speak to that level of, does this open up or does it explode? Because now this is the state creating the law. This isn't a local district making a decision that they want this. Because if they expose themselves to this, that's their deal. You know, I mean, I can't deal with what a local school board does. But as a state, I don't want to expose these local districts to a lot more than what they currently. You know what I mean? I guess I just would like to know, is there an expert that could answer some of this stuff? Are we going into really deep waters here? Or is this, no, that this has actually happened before? I don't know.
Well, I think with your indulgent, Representative Peterson, I'll ask the School Boards Association to come to the table.
Sure.
And then we can follow up also with Education Minnesota for a balanced approach.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kapp. Welcome to the testifying table. Please say your name for the record and then proceed with your answer to this very important question.
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneider. I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. I've brought my handyman, Bill Kout, from the School Boards Association with me as well. And as you know, there were some sidebar conversations, so perhaps the question could be restated.
Representative Kapp, please restate the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question I have then is, when you now say that, you know, all this data is private, okay, I get that, but in current law or the current process is that you're grieving a decision based on you as an individual. Now we're going to see some decisions based on multiple individuals who are being laid off, and they may start to question, well, okay, I understand that I've got greater seniority, so that means it had to have been based on evaluation or licensure. Licensure is pretty easy to figure out, but evaluation is not. Now you're going to have a comparison of private data of, you know, one person grieving, why one was kept and one wasn't. Is this something that is different than what we currently see? Is this exposing school districts to greater levels, as well as the current grievance of things in your employment file? I know that right now I can try and get things expunged from my file. How does that work, and would that play into this? And I don't know if you can answer.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Kath, and that's one of the issues that I think that's why we have the amendment here today. And I'm not 100% sure it's where we want to be either, but I think that the issue of teacher evaluation data is an important one, I think, because when you're making those decisions based on that, it needs to be accurate, and the teacher has a right to do that. So I think one of the issues that we're concerned about, as you remember from last meeting, we talked about the concept being one that we would certainly support moving forward, but the devil are in the details. And I think this is one of those issues where the devil is in the details. And I think potentially that, you know, without looking into the crystal ball and knowing for sure, that this potentially could raise a number of challenges and hearing requests by the teachers seeking information on the evaluation. As a result, that will be a cost to the union, and it will be a cost to the teacher, because it will be a hearing in front of an independent officer. And as a result, if we have more than one of those or multiple of those, that will be an additional cost for districts. And
gentlemen, while you are talking, I'm going to call on Representative researcher Lisa Larson to comment on what we probably have here as the essential question, so we understand it more clearly. Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, it would seem that one of the questions related to this whole data practices dilemma is, what is the effect of, for example, declaring as public the category of effectiveness belonging to a teacher, but not the underlying data giving rise to the effectiveness? Now, it, on one hand, it has the advantage of creating a little bit more certainty, which is what Representative Kath is talking about. On the other hand, it does give rise to the question whether teachers, because of the nature of the instrument, for example, would object to having that amount of information public. And that seems to me one of the important questions facing the committee this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Larson, very much. Gentlemen, any response to that?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Mr.
Members.
Pott.
Bill Cout. In answer to Ms. Larson's comments, we believe that if you were going to do that and list just the effectiveness categories, you would either have to put in the law that that was an exception to the Data Practices Act, or there would have to be a court case that would end up determining that, or Attorney General's opinion or Department Administration opinion, something along those lines. We're not able to make that determination. So either the committee would have to make that determination or someone else.
Representative Sandra Peterson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like to ask any one of the three, if I'm going to have this evaluation piece in place, and this is a data privacy issue also. I served on the principal's evaluation, and it was really interesting, but if I'm going to be evaluated, I, as a teacher, would want to know that principal has had at least a satisfactory, I would like the top two categories if I'm going to be evaluated, that principal actually has been evaluated, is competent, is qualified, highly qualified, and then we get into the data privacy. So if I'm laid off, do I have the right then as a teacher to request data around that principle.
Gentlemen. Mr. Schneider-Wind.
Madam Chair, I would have to consult with our legal counsel on that. I just don't know the answer to that piece.
The data privacy issue. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Peterson, I actually like the direction that you're taking. I think you're trying to adopt a respectful relationship with the professionals that we entrust to teach, and I think that's a good direction. I just want to be clear on your the MSBA's last statement where the suggestion is to put into law an exception to data privacy. Is that contingent just on using the categories, on revealing the data, or on both?
Mr. Kopp.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, it's on just the categories, not the raw data that puts the individual in that category. So depending upon what the evaluation looks like, if there are three or four categories and there's a name assigned to each category, so you would be in the most effective category or the highly effective category or the effective category or whatever, so that you could publish a list, such as Representative Kath was referring to earlier, by category, and then the teachers in that category, in that licensure area, would be the first thing, then in the category of effectiveness, and then the date of seniority or date of hire within that category. That's how the decisions would be made.
So then,
Representative Mariani.
The Madam Chair, I'm sorry I'm being repetitive here, but so that process in your mind, that listing of categories, in your opinion, would require or would be helpful to have changes to the data privacy law.
Representative Peterson.
Representative Mariani, Madam Chair. I don't support making the data public, and so the will of the author is to make it private. Right. The point of evaluations and of this entire performance management process is not to publicly beat over the head teachers with their effectiveness rating. It's to improve the profession, improve the caliber of teacher that is in front of the student. And the amendment at hand, it's really a simple question, whether you believe the data ought to be private or it's not. And if we could vote on that, that would be great, and I think we're going to have plenty of time after the end of the amendments to take multiple questions at the will of the chair to take questions as well. But I think that's the fundamental question that we're faced with at this point, is should it be private or should it not be? It's my opinion that it shouldn't be.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Representative Daphne, did you have a question in light of that?
Well, Madam Chair, I think the guys I wanted to ask to are escaping right now.
They're readily available.
It's thank you. It's similar to where Representative Mariani was going. If Representative Kath and I have similar or have the same hire dates, mm-hmm. and are both established as effective, mm-hmm. does the evaluation get any more fine-grained than that? Or is it a scale of 1 to 100 and I'm an 85 and he's an 87 and therefore I get laid off and he doesn't? What do we do if you've got two social studies teachers hired at the same time with who are in the same, or who knows, two school counselors who are, you know, both judged in that same band of effectiveness when it comes to layoff? And then to go back to the amendment in front of us, how do I know that Representative Kath was deemed to be more effective than I was, while respecting his privacy and mine with personnel data? Can anybody help me?
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Daphne, again, unless we prescribed the very nature of how the districts went about that process specifically at the state level, we don't have a specific answer for that question. The point is that, you know, we're gonna make it law that the data is private, and it's up to the professionals in those districts, and I give them that much credit to make decisions as to how to be discreet about doing this process. And I don't think we need to tell them exactly how that needs to be accomplished. And as far as your other question, you're assuming licensure is the same, effectiveness is the same, and seniority is the same. Is that correct? So what, you know, what we've went from is talking about a blunt instrument at the state level that says the only criteria that ought to be used is seniority, and now we're talking about the fine level of detail in an instance where all these things are the same. And I just find it ironic that that's you know, I guess apparently now what we're after. What I will say is that an amendment may be needed to the bill at the end of the evaluation process. That's possible, I suppose. But I think what you're getting at is a similar area to where I'm trying to go, which is making informed decisions about the layout process rather than mandating a hatchet at the state level to make this decision regardless of performance.
Ms. Alsberger, are you going to make a statement in regard to this discussion? Welcome to the testifying table. Please say your name for the record and proceed to give your response.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alsberger, Education Minnesota, I don't think that there's any doubt that this is going to bring forward a tremendous amount of litigation. Because how are you ever going to know if you have Principal A in Building A, Principal B in Building B, and now you have effectiveness ratings, and you're going to have to figure out how are you going to determine which one is really effective? And what Representative Peterson had to say is if you have principals who are not even evaluated or maybe are in the ineffective category but are still in the building, how can you really trust their decisions? So you might have disputes about or questions about what does this effectiveness rating look like compared to this one. Now you're looking at the effectiveness rating of the principals. And let's get back to the real issue here. You all want quality teachers, effective teachers. So do we. But let's separate seniority from evaluation. We want evaluation to work. Representative Peterson passed a bill last year to do that. And we're supporting that as best as we can. We want those evaluation programs to work at the local level. But let's not make any mistake about this. This is a state mandate that is very costly. And right now, you have local control. Right now, districts can negotiate what they want. There is no requirement here to negotiate. All it says is that the school board may negotiate. They don't have to. And one other very important point. This is going to become a real political battle in districts if this were to go through. Because we all know that there are these favorite teachers, it might be a favorite coach, that somebody doesn't want to get rid of. But they might be in that ineffective category, maybe because the principal was a good principal or maybe not a good principal in terms of their effectiveness.
Where is Andrew?
And maybe the principal doesn't really like the way they teach, and that's why they have this ineffective rating. And that teacher is let go, but he's very popular with a number of parents. Now we are making evaluation and seniority a political issue. Principals will be affected. Superintendents will be affected. School board members will be affected. One thing that the current language provides is order. Everyone knows what the order is. But let's not forget, within that order, principals should be doing their jobs to evaluate teachers, to tell teachers when they are not performing up to expectations, tell them what they need to do to improve, and if they are unwilling or unable to improve and to become an effective teacher, the law that Representative Peterson introduced and eventually was passed says clearly that if the teacher, after going through a teacher remediation process, is not able to be effective, that the superintendent or his designee or her designee is able to discipline, and that could include transfer, leave, and even termination. So let's not put them all together. These are two separate issues. Education Minnesota wants effective teachers in the classroom. That this is not about teacher effectiveness. This is about allowing individuals to pick and choose who is in the classroom.
Thank you, Ms. Alsberger. I think you've taken us a bit off track, but Representative Peterson, would it be better for you to lay this over and do the A19 so
no.
that we have, okay, because the A19 changes the made a must, and I heard Ms. Alsberger addressing that. And
We're still on the
A17
decision as to whether or not we're going to publicize a teacher's effectiveness rating. I think that's an important decision the committee has before it right now. Are we going to make public teacher effectiveness data, or are we not? That's the A17 amendment. Ms. Alsberger just gave a speech that encompassed a whole bunch of different issues that I won't address. If we could stick to at least the A17 so we can move through this process, that'd be great.
Representative Kath.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Then I guess if we are going to vote on this, a couple of questions then about then the evaluation for having the file. And first off, the current evaluation tool that was passed last session said it had to be on a 3-year cycle. Mm-hmm. So you have to have a summative every 3 years and then two other evaluations that don't have to be summative. They could be done by a peer. What is legislative intent then through your bill about what type of evaluation can be used under this ULA? And would it have to be done during the school year that the layoff is done?
Representative Peterson, is that a relevant question to this?
Loosely relevant. I would say that, first of all, the decision to make that private or not is, I think, a different conversation again. But as far as the current law as it relates to evaluations as passed by the majority and the governor dictates effectiveness. It will dictate effectiveness. And so upon that basis, will that decision be made? That's a direct answer to your question.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kath.
Representative Peterson, and you and I have had an offline discussion on this. I want some legislative intent on record on this. Could a summative evaluation that's 3 years old be used for me in this decision on ULA? In other words, if you are at year three where you just got another summative evaluation, two whole school years before could have been your last summative under current evaluation law. I hope and pray that if I struggled during that last summative that I have improved my teaching, or if I was even effective that I've improved even greater. The question I have is, will a summative evaluation or will a peer evaluation be allowed to be used in this type of ULA process? Because I think all of us in here will and should rise to the concern of saying that a peer-to-peer that is not under state law allowed to do a summative evaluation. I'm trying to get on record here, what type of evaluation will be used, and could that be up to 3 years old?
So under the
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Kath. So I wish we had the evaluation law in front of us. I think that would be helpful. If you read the evaluation law, as Jan Alsberger pointed out on the stand a minute ago, if a teacher is deemed ineffective, they enter a remedial process that lasts 12 months. And upon that, at that point, a decision will be made as to whether or not they've been remediated. And if they haven't, it is at the discretion of the district to discharge the teacher. So you've got a 12-month window there where they have the opportunity to remediate and will be deemed ineffective. Now, if ULA coincides with that, then obviously, being one of the lowest effective teachers, those people will be laid off. If not, I find your scenario highly unlikely that someone would be 3 years unless the district made an intentional decision to keep an ineffective teacher in their district.
Madam Chair?
That's what, according to law, I think that's important, according to statute, that's what it says.
Madam Chair?
Representative Kath.
Representative Peterson, I'm not just saying that. What about an effective versus highly effective? We don't even know what's what the measures are going to be. The group that's doing the evaluation, Bill, hasn't said, is it going to be 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 levels? So what you're saying is I could be at the 5th level and another teacher's at the 6th, but my summative evaluation was 2 years ago. Theirs was this year, and they are at the 6th level, and I'm at the 4th level, but mine was 2 years ago, my summative. Do you see where that is? I'm not talking about ineffective in this situation because, frankly, I think they should be gone before this ever happens, you know, before ULA. If they're an ineffective teacher and they had 12 months to remediate, they should be gone by this time. I'm talking about the one at the 4th and the 5th level, but one's got a 2-year-old summative evaluation and one's got a this-year evaluation. I see nothing in your bill that gives me the right as the 5th tier to say, hey, it's been 2 years. Before you do that ULA, I should have the right to have a summative evaluation that says that, you know, that I have, or I don't want the principal to say, oh, remember, you know, Mr. Swanson, who's a third-year teacher, came and evaluated you as a peer review. We're going to use his evaluation. I'm concerned about that, and I think that's a genuine concern.
Yeah. I think it
Representative Peterson.
I think it is a genuine concern. Madam Chair, I just want to be sure to know how much time I have here today. So we'll be coming back tonight to finish this bill up.
Yes,
and be here
Representative Peterson, we can continue
this
into the evening.
So great. Correct. So we can talk about this all day, and I look forward to it. As far as the scenario that you pointed out, I'll start by saying that the ULA process is unfortunate in all respects, right? The idea that we're going to be laying off teachers due to lack of funding or lack of pupils or a school merger is an unfortunate decision for every teacher to be faced with. So with that being said, none of these outcomes are desirable outcomes. Along the lines of effectiveness, the bill states that in the unfortunate event that an effective or higher teacher, and according to, again, we're talking about something that's not really relevant to the amendment. I'd like to at some point vote on this amendment. According to the NCLB waiver requirements, there's got to be at least 3 categories. So the working group will work within that mandate, I would presume. I think a lot of people agree that more categories would be more effective. But an effective teacher, yes, that will be an informed decision, and there's a potential that they would be laid off. What we've written into the bill, in that unfortunate situation, we retain the 5-year right of recall for effective teachers. Which is an issue related to the other sections of the bill, which we haven't got to yet. But we provide additional protection for those people who are unfortunately laid off that have been effective in their job. So, like I said, we're not starting with the premise that these are great personnel decisions to be made. They're all unfortunate. And if an effective teacher is laid off, then that's unfortunate, and we retain current law's recall privileges for that reason.
Madam Chair?
Representative Kath, last question.
Yeah, I'll just come back to it later. What I want to know is, when are those summative evaluations, would they have to be done in the year that the ULA is actually done? My question has not been answered about, and we can just come back to it later. We can go on to the... So the summative evaluation would not have to be done in the year that you are offered the ULA?
No.
Well, members, I hope that we think about that. That if it's 3 years old, that was when... It could have been my 9th year of teaching. I'm on my 12th year now. That isn't fair to a teacher to say that they wouldn't get an evaluation for 3 years, but yet that 3-year-old evaluation could be used against them. That is of deep concern to me. I mean, if one of our whole goals here in staff development and of PLCs and all the work that we have put in as a committee to say that we want to grow teachers, but yet you're not going to give them the chance to show who they are in the year that they would be put on ULA. I'm proud to have an evaluation. I'm proud to have one every year. And I understand that the reason that we passed the bill to say that it's every 3 years is because we don't have enough principals. It would be the Principal Hiring Act of 2012 to get enough principals in there to do all these evaluations. But what I'm saying is that if you're going to use my 3-year-old evaluation to make very, very high-stakes decisions about me as an educator, man, I think we need to rethink that. And we need to make sure that those teachers have that opportunity to say, I want a good evaluation, and I want it now if you're going to make that decision. So I hope you would consider that.
Madam Chair, it's a very important point that brings to light, kind of the whole reason that we're here today, which is making informed decisions as it relates to this whole process. And I think what Representative Caff is after is what we're ultimately after, and that is that we're not making this decision on something that isn't attached to the fundamental outcome that we're after, which is student learning. And would you like to offer an amendment that would require teacher evaluations annually? Because I supported that position, and I absolutely do. It was in my bill last year, and I would accept that amendment if you would like to offer that.
Representative Kath, just so you know what Education Minnesota supported last year and what was placed in the omnibus bill is that we must establish a three-year professional review cycle for each teacher that includes an individual growth and development plan, a peer review process, the opportunity to participate in professional learning community under paragraph A, and at least one summative evaluation performed by a qualified and trained evaluator, such as a school administrator. For the years when a tenured teacher is not evaluated by a qualified and trained evaluator, the teacher must be evaluated by a peer review, must be based on professional teaching standards established in rule, must coordinate staff development activities under sections 122A.60 and 122A.61 with this evaluation process and teachers' evaluation outcomes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would say that bill was created when this was never in existence. And you are trying to disengage these two things, Representative Peterson, in your content today. That's why I think we have a ton of work. I don't know what the teacher evaluation model is going to look like. I don't know if it's going to have three levels. I don't know if it's going to have five levels. I don't know what it's going to look like. So that's the sad thing, is I can't even draft an amendment right now because I don't know what it's going to look like. And I guess that's my struggle, except for the fact that I think a teacher should have the right to a summative evaluation before they're put on ULA. And I guess if it's that simple, let's do it. But the thing I'm concerned about then is then in April, when I'm told that I'm going to be laid off, I'm now going to ask for a summative, and now that might change all of that up because I just asked for a summative because now I've been informed that I need a summative. And I think we're getting, and I know I'm in the weeds right now, but this bill is in the weeds in the sense that, like, that is a, I think it's a reasonable thing for a teacher to ask, but now I don't know how you would do it because now, of course, they're going to change their game because now they know that they're on the ULA chopping block. So I guess I'm confused. I hope that the members of the committee would agree with me that a peer evaluation or a non-summative that, or a summative that's 3 years old is old news. So I don't know.
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, I guess the question, you know, policy, education policy, is all the experienced members of this committee know is our purview, and we have the ability to make changes to law that we believe in. Representative Kath has lamented the fact that there's not summative evaluations on an annual basis, and I encourage an amendment to change that if that's the way that he feels, and we can all vote on it, and I'll vote for it. So that's a done deal. That's a decision that this committee makes. If we want to make that decision, let's make it.
In the meantime,
we're all on record as making that
Representative
decision.
Peterson, the question before us is, should this information be
Absolutely.
Private or public?
I'm even getting off track now.
And I think we need to vote on that, members. Representative Peterson, question to the particular amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair. And my question wasn't answered before because I think a lot of this, you know, we're dealing with data privacy here, both for teachers and I think for principals. And I still don't have an answer as to whether the principal's data is private, and are we going to have to go to a grievance every time we go, you know, to lay someone off because they want to know whether their principal was qualified. And perhaps Mr. Aronson can answer that. The School Board Association could not, and Representative Peterson could not either.
I
is there somebody that can? Maybe Mr. Aronson.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Peterson. Sandra will call Mr. Aronson to the table.
The answer is yes. Due process rights.
Please say your name for the record and give us your response.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principals Association. I think the answer to Representative Peterson's question is no. There's nothing in Representative Peterson's bill, in the principal evaluation statute or the teacher evaluation statute, that requires some special qualification or criteria for a principal to do that evaluation. If that principal's licensed and we have principal evaluation, I mean, that they will be evaluated because that is required by your bill from last year in 13. And I think it's kind of a a bit of a ruse to say the question is the quality of the evaluators. And in fact, the way the teacher evaluation bill was crafted last year, teachers and peer review stuff is integrated into that as well.
Right.
So there are some, if that is a legitimate concern, there are some safety net pieces on that. So I don't see that in terms of this discussion as an impediment to moving forward with the evaluation process.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. Representative Peterson, Sandra.
Representative Peterson and Mr. Aronson, the question is, do the principals have data privacy so that is a teacher going to have, if they are questioning the qualifications of a principal, will they have to go to grievance, or is that open information for a teacher to know how a principal was evaluated?
Mr. Aronson.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, that data under the Data Practices Act would be treated as the same. I mean, it would be private data.
Representative Peterson.
Okay, Madam Chair and Mr. Aronson. So, indeed, if a teacher would have to go to a litigation or a grievance process in order to get that information.
Mr. Aronson.
Madam Chair, I think the question is, if a teacher commenced some sort of challenge of their evaluation,
yes,
in the process of that, could they subpoena the principal's
evaluation
private data? You know, and then that's a good question. I think obviously you could subpoena anything, whether or not the arbitrator would allow that to happen, and the principal interposes an objection to it. It gets kind of complicated in getting down to those various levels.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's still very unclear, but it gave me... I think the answer is we'd probably have to try to subpoena the information.
So, members, I think we're ready to vote on the A-17 amendment.
Representative Chair.
Chilberry?
And
is it relevant to this?
Too.
Okay. Go ahead and ask it the question.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I guess I'm really confused on what's relevant to the amendment, because this is rather confusing with the amendments already. If that's any indication of how confusing this bill can be, that's one thing. But data that is used, whether it's private data that's used or not used, I believe is what the amendment was supposed to get to. Am I correct?
You are correct, Representative Tilbury.
Yeah, the amendment.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then my issue is, much like Representative Peterson's also, where you're using data, and you had read off what was approved last time on the computer, or where people stood as you read that off, but you're mixing two separate things. It would be like myself being compared to Representative Dabney. Whereas the evaluation forms earlier, when you have the three-year piece, that's for me. That's my private information. Now all of a sudden you're comparing two. And that's where I feel like you're not, this doesn't answer this. Or you just saying yes or no doesn't answer the question of whether or not this is fair. So then I looked at a letter that was provided by the department, which asked the question, how does this bill ensure a fair, equitable, and orderly process to manage layoffs, protect morale, and mitigate the potential for litigation against school districts? This amendment here just adds a slew of litigation onto it. So I'm wondering, how does this ensure a fair and equitable and orderly process? I have no clue of how the author would even begin to explain how this could be fair.
Representative Peterson, Brandon.
Madam Chair, Representative Tilbury, it does so in the same manner that the evaluations that were signed into law by Governor Dayton last session maintains a fair, equitable, reliable process. And in terms of this bill or this amendment adding a slew of litigation, you know, the question is fundamentally, do you believe that effectiveness ought to be public data or not? And do you believe performance management data ought to be public or not? That's the question at hand. And I'd like to request a roll call on the amendment.
A roll call has been requested. Representative Tilbury.
Yeah, I guess I'd like to kind of look at that, too. Is that you're kind of turning this into like a March Madness setup.
and I go to the NCAA deal where they have power rankings that they determine which 64 teams are going to play on a given weekend. That's kind of what, rather than the seniority list, we're going to have power rankings is where I kind of think we're going. Because, I mean, what happens if 6 years experience versus a 12-year experience person, both are deemed effective according to the particular evaluation that took place? Which one then gets laid off? If it's Dabney versus Tilbury, he has 12 years, I have 6. We're both deemed effective. How does that happen? I have a feeling that the district's kind of going to go to whoever's more expensive is going to be laid off, rather than whether it's highly effective or whether student achievement gets put into this. There's just so many holes into this particular piece, I don't even know where to begin.
Representative Peterson Brandon, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Tilbury, you know, I think that question's already been asked a number of times, so I won't answer it in terms of the power rankings, you know, okay. And the last part about, you know, a common theme in this committee has been one side of the committee constantly questioning the integrity of administrators throughout the state of Minnesota. If we truly believe that every administrator has nefarious intent and is a bad actor, you know, God help us all. I mean, the system is, that's a much bigger problem than anything that is included in this bill. You know, discrimination based on age, compensation is, you know, those things are already against the law.
I think it's relevant.
So we can't make them more illegal than they already are. So, you know, I'd love to take an amendment, but they're already illegal. So I don't know what to say about that.
Representative Greiling, is this relevant to the A17 privacy issue?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's relevant to the discussion, which I have to say, Madam Chair, I find it very confining. If we're going to take the attitude that we have leisurely time to discuss this bill, we're coming back tonight. Representative Peterson and others can have far-ranging comments, and now you get to me and some others, and we're supposed to confine ourselves to this one topic. I find that offensive and unfair. I myself am going to pass on this amendment because it's too narrow for this discussion to even vote on it. I think that, you know, a lot of us would like to have data be private, but I think that this amendment, you know, voting yes or no on it, is not sufficient, and I shall just pass in protest to this whole process that we have here today. I will say, though, that the questions, and very good questions from people around this table, are more evidence that this this bill is premature, putting the cart before the horse before we have the teacher evaluation. For the good people who I sympathize with in the audience who want something and they want it fast to help out with the fact that all we have in some districts is seniority-driven ULA decisions, you're not going to get it with this bill. You heard it's going to be 4 years before anything happens. And so I find it then even more offensive that we can't have an intelligent and thoughtful and thorough discussions of this topic. I think it should wait until after the teacher evaluation, but if the majority is going to force it through, then I think we deserve to ask our questions. And the author, I would implore you to not have such a cavalier attitude of saying, if we could just vote on this pretty soon, and dismissing those of us who have legitimate concerns about the fairness for teachers and the cost of litigation. And that's another one of my comments, Madam Chair, is if we're just going to have an amendment later that the author says he's in favor of to have annual evaluations, this bill needs to go not straight to the floor in haste, but to the Finance Committee. We already discussed annual evaluations last year, and as Representative Cass said, while we might all like that as utopia, there's a lot of things we'd like as utopia for our students, and we can't afford it. And annual evaluations and that whole Peterson bill that we had last year when we had hearings around the state, I know we all heard about how expensive that was, what an unfunded mandate that was for schools. One of the mantras of this session that we all bring up bipartisanly is no more mandates or no more unfunded mandates or slack off on those mandates if we're not giving any money. And here now, you're just ready to put that back in this policy committee. Not going, this bill isn't going to finance. It's going straight to the floor. So I think we have to do what you're saying, but not how you're acting in this committee. Take our time. And I would say that would mean not passing this bill this year.
Well, Representative Greiling, as you know, we have the flexibility plan now that's been approved, and the commissioner has said in the flexibility plan that teacher evaluation will be piloted in these turnaround schools starting this next school year. So we're going to have a lot of input into teacher evaluation throughout the state, because the turnaround schools, some of those will be pilots. So she has to get very busy and get the teacher evaluation in place if she's going to hold to her word in the flexibility plan that has been approved. Madam, so we're going to be very busy. Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, first of all, I do want to address, if my attitude has been cavalier, I probably have been overly emotional. It was a late night last night. I was here in Property Tax Committee, and I have kind of a drive home, so I apologize sincerely for the public record. And I'm willing to take any question on any issue that you guys want to talk about, and I'll make myself available all day if that's what it takes. I think it's an important issue, and so that being said, you made your statement about you think it's too early. I appreciate that feedback. I think we've kind of addressed that issue. I've addressed it in my own way. If you'd like me to respond, I can again.
Representative Peterson, Sandra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have to, and Representative Peterson, you know, I really do have to respond a bit to the idea that that we're denigrating the principals, because we're not. They are a key part of this whole process. They're the ones who are doing this evaluation, who are making a determination about whether you're a level 3 or a level 2, whatever it is. And it seems to me that any teacher wants to know that they're being evaluated by a principal who also knows what they're doing. I've been evaluated by principals, some of them very good, some of them I would consider not so good. And if a principal indeed has an unsatisfactory or just a developing rating themselves, I'd be a little concerned, and I might indeed challenge that kind of a rating with the principal, or at least want to know what the rating is. That's not denigrating our principals. We have very good principals all over the state, and they are indeed in this very tightly with teachers. So I just was a little bit astonished at your remarks about principals. Thank you.
I agree.
So I think we will proceed with the vote on this amendment. A roll call has been requested. Is that correct, Representative Peterson?
I'll withdraw my request.
He withdraws his request for a roll call. All those in favor of the A-17 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, same sign.
No.
No.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair?
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, I think with the adoption of that amendment and the area that we explored regarding litigation and the privacy and the like, it's important that this bill now go to civil law for further exploration of that by folks who, you know, have the civil law hat on, something that we don't have, an area of expertise we don't have. So I would like to move that, if assuming that this bill passes, that the motion before the committee be that the bill be re-referred to the civil law committee, and I'd ask for a roll call.
Representative Dabney moves that the 1870, as it will be amended eventually, be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law, and a roll call has been requested. Representative Mariani.
Procedurally, are we at the point of moving the bill then, or is this just a changing of the motion?
This is just a changing of the motion.
Okay.
Representative Erickson.
No.
Representative Depke.
No.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Barrett.
No.
Representative Benson.
Pass.
Representative Crawford.
No.
Representative Dabney.
Yes.
Representative Greiling.
Yes.
Representative Kath.
Yes.
Representative Kiefer.
No.
Representative Keel.
No.
Representative McFarlane.
No.
Representative Moran.
Yes.
Representative Murdoch.
No.
Representative Myra.
No.
Representative Norton.
Yes.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Peterson Brandon.
No.
Representative Peterson Sandra.
Yes.
Representative Tilbury.
Yes.
Representative Woodard.
No.
Representative Benson.
Yes.
There being 9 yeses and 12 noes, this change to the direction of House File 1870, as it will eventually be amended, is not adopted. Representative Peterson, your next amendment.
On that note, I will check with the chair of that committee and
thank
see
you, sir.
If,
thank you, sir.
If he's interested in pursuing that. Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A-19 amendment.
Representative Peterson moves the A-19 amendment. Will you explain it, please?
Yes. This was also the result of our brief conversation in the last hearing regarding what our current language or the old language of the bill said, that the districts and local bargaining unit may negotiate an agreement, and if they don't, the school board has unilateral authority to change the ULA law. And that I think that approach is flawed in the fact that much like the current seniority mandate being the default on the negotiation on the negotiated leave, creates a perverse incentive for those that want to keep that in place to simply not negotiate. This our bill actually went completely in the opposite direction and created an incentive for the school board to simply not negotiate, and that neither one of those is what we want. We want negotiations in good faith if they do happen. And so what this bill does is say that in instances where they divert from the current ULA statute, it must be negotiated. And we change the may to a must. It must be negotiated by the local bargaining unit and the district.
Discussion.
And so to be clear, until the full-blown effectiveness date, sorry, Madam Chair, just to be clear on the amendment, until the full-blown effectiveness date, the current seniority state mandate stays in place unless both parties agree, otherwise consistent with Subdivision 8.
Representative Norton, you look like you have a question.
I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. Could I have some clarification on line 1.6? From the least to most effective category, is that a typo and it should be most?
Representative Peterson, will you note that, please?
It's just a technical error.
It should be most.
Accept that technical amendment.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Norton, for pointing that out. We assume that was caught already. Further discussion? Hearing none, all of those in favor of the A-19 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Peterson,
aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Peterson, the A-20 amendment, I believe.
And finally, yes. This amendment is just to further clarify that statute does not supersede collective bargaining agreements that were already in place, and make sure that doesn't happen. So that's simply what it does.
Discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor of the A-20 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Peterson, are there any other amendments? We have the A-16. Thank you, Ms. Larson. Let us return to the A-16 amendment, on which Ms. Larson has prepared some language. Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, with the committee, would be...
Speak into your microphone, please.
If the committee would follow the DE4 amendment, please. On page 2, line 35, delete, or to a substantially different grade level assignment. On page 3, line 3, delete quote A. Page 3, delete lines 4 and 5. On page 4, line 6, delete or to a substantially different grade level assignment. Page 4, line 8, delete a substantially different grade level assignment means an assignment between. Page 4, delete line 9. And on page 7, line 15, delete or to A. On page 7, line 16, delete substantially different grade level assignment. Page 7, line 17, delete a substantially. Page 7, delete lines 18 and 19.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. A discussion about, not so much a discussion, but clarification. Anyone? Did you follow basically the same language deleted? Representative Peterson.
That sounds great to me.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, we are voting on the A16 amendment as amended. All those in favor of the A16 as amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. I have one other amendment, Representative Caff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think before this, we had that we had discussed earlier in the data privacy about an amendment that would force a summative evaluation in the year of the ULA that Ms. Larson drafted, if that's okay to take that first.
Thank you, Representative Caff. Ms. Larson, again, you want us with the DE4, is that correct?
Madam?
Or, no.
Madam Chair, members, if the committee wouldn't mind, what we need to do is, in fact, go in and amend, in my opinion, the teacher evaluation statutes. It would be in two places, 122A40, subdivision 8, paragraph B, and also 122A41, subdivision 5, again, paragraph B. And at the very end of paragraph B, after the list of all the criteria and the declaration that the evaluation data are personnel data, to add one more sentence saying the following: notwithstanding the 3-year professional review cycle, a teacher who receives an unrequested leave of absence or dismissal or termination, I have to make the language conform with either A40 or 41 notice, has the right to have a summative evaluation performed in the same school year the teacher receives the notice.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kath.
Just as a quick explanation, this was the conversation earlier of saying that you wouldn't be able to then use a 3-year-old evaluation on a teacher, that they would have a right to a summative evaluation in the year that they would be receiving a ULA. This would, of course, I know, to the members, it would have a fiscal note to it, and so it would have to go then, you know, redirect this bill in a different direction. But the fact is that I hope that we can agree that that is something that would be fair to that teacher, that they would have the right to a summative evaluation in the year that they would be laid off.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Caff. The one issue that I have with the amendment is not the idea that we're going to evaluate teachers, is that it is dependent upon only the ULA process, and that really places districts behind the eight ball. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to, one, identify the fact that who's going to be a part of that and who's going to be laid off, and then have to quick get summative evaluations done. I would prefer, as we was written into the bills last year, to simply require an annual evaluation for all teachers.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kath.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson, you know, and I guess I would then be in favor of that to say, but I think then you're going to have a grandiose fiscal note to this bill now. I was trying to do just a lowering of saying, in talking with my principals, they would say by January they're already talking FTEs. They kind of know the numbers that they're looking at. They would know the departments in which, you know, they're already seeing where some layoffs are going to need to occur. April 1, I believe, is the date, and please somebody correct me if I'm wrong on this. April 1 would be the date that you would have to do the ULAs, so you would have maybe February and March to be able to offer those summatives. But it's your bill, and you can make the decision. I was just trying to make it fit very tightly for the fiscal note.
Also, Madam
Representative
Chair,
Peterson.
Representative Kath, I know what the fiscal note was last year, the local impact note on the evaluations. That was presupposed on the QCOMP model, which was three evaluations a year. I would presume this one would be significantly less than that number. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I as you know, I enjoy working in a collaborative nature, haven't, frankly, had the opportunity to speak to the rural districts, which I know in final negotiations last year in particular, the rural districts of this state were concerned about the workload, administrative workload tied to annual evaluations, and at one point was two evaluations a year. I don't think I can make it or this committee can make an informed decision as it relates requiring an evaluation every year. I agree with the general principle. I'd like to get more information on that. If we do ULAs, I guess I'd like to hear more about your intent as far as the ULA amendment goes.
Yep. Madam Chair.
Representative Kath.
It's very simple, saying that the decision-making process on effectiveness would have to be used on a summative evaluation. And therefore, then that summative evaluation would have to be done during the school year that the ULA is actually proposed. So the only thing I'm trying to remediate here is that you would not be using a 2 or 3-year-old summative evaluation from that principal in that school year to make a decision. So what I'm saying is that it is going to take more legwork for principals, because they are going to have to identify their potentials for the end of the year, and they're going to need to make sure that anybody that they may put on unrequested leave would have had a summative evaluation that year. If they don't, they have a risk of saying that in April and May, after they've already sent out those ULAs, now they are going to have to go back, because that person's going to ask for one. And really what it does is it allows for that teacher then to ask for that summative too. Mm-hmm. I would hope that they would be, you know, preventative on it. I mean, but sometimes you just can't be. And I get that. I'm just trying to say to the committee, I think everybody deserves a summative evaluation in the year that they're laid off.
Representative Peterson, I would recommend that, because this is somewhat off topic and deals more with what Representative Kath is suggesting anyway, more in light of the teacher evaluation, that you and he work together and probably introduce some legislation that would make those changes rather than our dealing with it in this particular piece. Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Kath, the current evaluation law mandates that one summative evaluation be done every 3 years. That's the mandate. And we allow local districts to make decisions otherwise. They could, in fact, do three evaluations. You know, they could do evaluation every year. I think in the interest, Madam Chair, and we can even recess or whatever you want to do, I think the at the core of the issue that we have at hand is that we want to make the best decision possible, keeping in mind a fair process for teachers that's informed by the most important thing, which is their impact on student learning. This amendment addresses that concern very directly. And I think that it's incompatible with the idea that we have here that we're going to make an informed decision to not accept this amendment. So I will accept the Kath amendment if that's okay. I would like to accept the ULA provision as he specifically.
So, Representative Peterson, do we need Ms. Larson to repeat the language?
Yeah.
Because you're going to eliminate something or not?
I don't believe we're going to eliminate anything. I think we're going to add something.
So, Ms. Larson, would you repeat what you brought forward?
Madam Chair, members, I would be glad to draw up this amendment so that the members can see the actual document. But the idea is to add two sections to Representative Peterson's bill. The sections would be from the same 122A40 and 41 that are being currently amended, but they would be the subdivisions relating to the teacher evaluation structure. In paragraph B, in subdivision 8 of 122A40, and in paragraph B in subdivision 5 of 122A41, there is the teacher evaluation structure enacted last year. There are a list of criteria. There is a sentence having to do with declaring the evaluation data to be personnel data. So I would recommend adding one more sentence under paragraph B having to do with the evaluation. The following, and it has to be only slightly different because unrequested leaves of absence pertain to 122A40,
right,
and discharge and demotion pertain to 122A41. So that would be the only difference between the two provisions, but in each case, the language would read, adding to that paragraph B, notwithstanding the three-year professional review cycle, a teacher who receives an unrequested leave of absence notice, or if it's A41, discharge or demotion notice, has the right to have a summative evaluation performed in the same school year the teacher receives the notice.
Representative Peterson, do you want written language in front of you, or are you satisfied that this will accommodate
I don't need it.
Out of desire?
Out of respect for the folks who are going to have to implement this, I do think we ought to hear what they have to say, the school boards and administrators, et cetera. So if they have an opinion, I would welcome that.
Madam Chair?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you. A quick clarifying question, I think, at least starters for Ms. Larson. Under the language that you have crafted, does that summative evaluation have to have occurred previous to that April 1st deadline for the issuance of the ULA or whatever the timeline is for the termination, if it's a termination?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, if April 1 is the deadline, it would not be possible to know in every case when the year in which the notice is given, that notice would be given. And much depends upon what the task force creating the state plan decides in terms of how the evaluation process works. So whether the deadlines correspond or not, at this point, I don't know.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. And I like the intent. I'm now concerned about, you know, the implementation, because we've now set up a scenario where April 1st comes along. I, as the principal, give Ms. Norton her layoff notice and say, you know, sorry, you're just not as effective, but I'm doing it based on a two-year-old evaluation. She then takes this right that we've granted under statute for a new evaluation, and three potential outcomes occur. Either I go into the room as the administrator and say, yeah, no, you're not as effective as Mr. Tilbury, so you get the layoff notice. Or, human nature being what it is and we see what we're looking for, I go in and find her to be ineffective because I've already decided she is. Or, a third scenario, I go in and say, gosh, you've really improved since 2 years ago. You're more effective than Tilbury. I'm now removing your layoff notice and laying off Tilbury, but of course now I've missed the April 1st deadline, so I can't do that. So now you're more effective than Tilbury, but I'm laying you off. Or I find a way to lay off Tilbury, but I've now created chaos in the school because nobody knows who's going out next. And so unless this is done previous to that April 1st deadline, I don't know how we actually implement. You're absolutely right on the intent. But for those of us who care more about the practicalities than the politics of this issue, we're back in the weeds. And the water's rising, I think.
Representative Peterson Brown.
Madam Chair, I think the line of questioning highlights the idea that this idea just needs more work. The amendment in this process is far from over, and so I will not accept the amendment, the CAP amendment, and we just need to collaborate more with the folks who are going to be directly involved with that decision-making process. I understand the intent. I think it's well-founded. I understand what Representative Dabney says. They're both have merit, and we'll have an opportunity to make that change outside of committee. I don't think it detracts from the core objective of the bill, however.
So, Representative Kath, did you ever offer it as an official amendment?
Madam Chair, I think I did, and I'm willing to put back, but I'm going to let you know that does not allow me to vote for this bill today. You know, that is just in my heart, that is not right to say to somebody that you can have a peer evaluation or a two-year or three-year-old evaluation drive this. So I'm going to tell you that it's a major flaw, but I'm just glad to hear you say on record that now you want to work together on this to try and find a way to solve this scenario. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely.
And so, Madam Chair, I will withdraw the amendment.
Representative Peterson? Members, we're going to be meeting tonight at 6 o'clock in this room to continue this. So if you two need to have some discussion, that will be just fine.
Yeah, great.
Representative Peterson, anything else?
What time is it? Are we done here?
No, we have we have about 9 minutes left, and I was hoping that Representative Eakin was going to show up so I could get his bill finished. Yes, but we could work him in because we're going to continue this tonight. So, yes. So we will continue this discussion until Representative Eakin can get here.
Madam Chair, I know Representative Kath has an amendment. I don't know if you want to, if you'd like to go over that or anything at this point. Or
Representative Kath, were you going to offer the A18?
Yes, Madam Chair, I was going to offer the A18 amendment. Members, you have this in your file, and it goes along with the DE4. It follows along with that.
Representative Kath offers the A18 amendment. Explain your amendment, Representative Kath.
Yep. And this is something that we can go over now, ask some questions on it, and we can, you know, take a look at it tonight. It follows along with something that was already done to the bill, and that is in subdivision 10 there, it just says that the bargaining representative of the teachers and the school board must negotiate a plan. It's just very simply stating that, that a plan must be there, and you don't have a contract until a plan is agreed to. And what it says is that it's no longer the default of going to seniority. It's the statement of saying that as a board and as a teacher's unit, you must figure out what your plan is for ULA. And then that goes into place beginning the 2017-2018 school year. And the reason I did that is that that's the next contract cycle after we had already see the teacher effectiveness, that the evaluation model going into place. So really what it does is it kind of informs that decision and says to them that, okay, now you have your tool. Now you're going to have to put something in place. It's no longer just a default seniority. It has to go. You have to create an agreement on ULA. Furthermore, it talks about the exemptions that a board may do in order to look at some areas that we discussed last session. And last session we talked about that there's licensure, but now there's some certifications, some areas that are kind of those gray areas that people are trained in. And as an example of that, my daughter goes to Montessori, and Montessori teachers are trained in that style of education. Oh. And what we know is that license doesn't give to Montessori. That's a certification. So what this allows then is some of the areas that we really did have vast agreement. There was some, I believe, some peace in the valley on that, where it says that and this is on the bottom of page 1 into 2, that an immersion program, advanced placement, kindergarten through grade 12 instrumental vocal license, and currently serve as a choir, band, or orchestra director, and in the superintendent's judgment make a unique delivery of curriculum. Montessori language immersion must be placed on unrequested leave of absence consistent with paragraphs B to G, and that just means that if there's other Montessori teachers, then they would have those rights. So it looks at it from that context. It's a much more simplified way to look at this, and really what it does is it puts it in the hands of the local. You know, we as a state oftentimes think we know more than the locals. Well, right now more than 40% of our school districts already are creating agreements like this that are saying that, you know what, it isn't just based on seniority. It isn't just the fact that you have a K-12 license. There's other things here that we should examine. So to Representative Peterson, it does, I mean, it's way simplifies the bill because it really takes the state out of it. And as somebody that doesn't like big government, I think that this is the way that we go about this, is to say, guess what, locals? You need to do your work here. You get to negotiate an effectiveness tool. So in other words, you get to negotiate your evaluation system, which may also be the state model, if that's what you so choose. But in return then, you must negotiate how you utilize that in ULA. And so that's kind of what the gist of the amendment is. It's actually very simple, but I would stand for any questions that members have.
And thank you, Representative Kathy. We'll lay this over until this evening, because I would like to have Representative Eakin present 1542. So, members, I'm laying over House File 1870 as it has been amended and may be further amended until we meet again at 6 o'clock tonight in this room. Representative Eakin, welcome to our committee, and I will move House File 1542. And Ms. Larson, did we have an amendment for this? Okay, thank you. I guess it is amended according to what we put in the omnibus bill last year. So, Representative Eakin, yeah. Welcome to our committee, and please say your name for the record and explain briefly what your bill is.
Thank you, Chair Erickson, and I'm Kent Eakin, District 2A, and I'm here today to... and I do have an amendment to the bill. I don't know if I could offer it as an oral amendment.
Ms. Larson isn't giving us a nod. You have an amendment.
I have an oral amendment. Yeah.
An oral amendment. Go ahead with your oral amendment. I'm sorry.
Oh, sure. And that would be on line 1.22. Where it says school, take out the word school and put in five. And in the word year, add the letter S. And at the end of the sentence, take out tornado or fire. Delete tornado or fire. And put in a period after flood.
So, members, I'll offer this oral amendment on the behalf of Representative Eakin on line 1.22, delete school and insert 5, add an S to year, so it reads 5 years, and delete tornado, comma, or fire, in fact, comma, tornado, comma, or fire, and replace the period after flood. Discussion to that oral amendment. Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The oral amendment is adopted. Representative Eakin, now your bill is in the order in which you'd like it. Go ahead and briefly explain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm bringing this bill forward to address a flooding issue that we have in our area. And I represent a district right along the Red River. And there's a school district there, Norman County West, which serves 6 different towns all along the Red River. They're all located along Highway 75, which parallels the Red River. And I think most of you are aware of the flooding problems we experience on the Red River on an almost annual basis. And I know Representative Erickson, Madam Chair, that you're familiar with that area. She was born in Ada, and actually the same hospital I was born in.
Yes.
And I don't know.
A few years before you, but that's okay.
And that hospital, by the way, where we were born, no longer exists,
right.
And it's because of a terrible flood that occurred in Ada, destroyed the hospital. So we have constant struggles with the flooding in that area. And the superintendent of the school there has brought forward a proposal, asked me to bring forward a proposal, to allow an exemption from the post-Labor Day school start in order to build in some flexibility, some cushion for them, because it happens so often that in the spring their students are missing multiple days of school. And their school year then extends out into June. They can't change the graduation date, so the graduation occurs before the end of the school year, and the seniors are gone, and the students who come back after graduation, he said it's hard to keep them engaged after the seniors have graduated. So what he wants to do is to have this cushion built in so that if and when they do experience these floods, they won't have to extend their school year long into the summer after graduation has occurred. And so that's what this is designed to do, and it says that if a school district has canceled at least two instructional school days in the previous 5 years because of a flood, they would be exempt from this post-Labor Day school start. And I do have, I don't know if there's time or not, but if there is, we could show at least a portion of a video of the flooding that occurs in that area, and you'll see that there's been ring dikes built around the towns in that area and also around the farms, and they look like virtual islands surrounded by water. It's almost like Lake Agassiz is reclaiming itself sometimes in the spring, and you can see how it's impossible to get students to the school, and transportation is a real problem. So if we have some time, we could show a little of that.
Representative Norton, you have a question?
Madam Chair, I'm very supportive, and I know there are other districts in this state that have natural disasters that affect them, and so this is generic enough for that. But I would ask the department and implore this committee, who deals with this policy issue regularly, to look for the critical mass when we have more districts starting before Labor Day because of exemptions that are given under these rules, mm-hmm. that at some point this policy committee needs to acknowledge that local control is needed for every dang school district in this state to decide when they want to start their schools before or after Labor Day. And so, while I am supportive of Representative Eakin's, you know, I would hope Representative Eakin, next time this bill comes up for a pre-Labor Day start, will be sympathetic to all the districts in the state who have their own reasons for wanting to do that. So I just had to get on my little soapbox. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Norton, and I appreciate your soapbox. I'm standing there with you. And as we continue to watch the video, is there any further discussion? Representative Mariani.
I just do want to acknowledge that this is one of those areas where we've had solid bipartisan support in this committee. This committee has been speaking on this issue through both Republican and Democratic control on this issue, but we keep running into
it's called the hospitality industry. Thank you, Representative Mariani. And members, as you can see in this video, this devastation in the area of these five towns is absolutely, unquestionably, something that we have to consider when it comes to our students. Representative Eakin.
Madam Chair, I was going to mention, this is where the elementary school is located in Hendrum. The high school is in Halstead. As you can see, Hendrum here completely surrounded by water.
Thank you. Members, all those in favor of House File 1542 as amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the bill is adopted and will be sent to the floor. Representative Eakin, I disregarded that, but your bill will be on the floor. Members, put everything in your folders so that our pages can have it ready for us tonight. And this meeting is in recess till 6 o'clock tonight. Thank you. I'll call the meeting back to order, please. Members, you should have at your places an unengrossed document that Ms. Larson prepared for us. That, of course, is not what we'll act on, but it does help you see the flow of amendments that now or were adopted. So if you just want to refer to that, we found some technical problems, but those will be corrected eventually. I think, Representative Kath, were you offering the A18 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I think we kind of had a discussion on it before we took a recess, and really what the A18 amendment does in front of you is the first is very similar to what Representative Peterson's bill does in the sense that it just forces the negotiations. It says that a plan must be put together by the teachers and the school board, and that plan must deal with ULA, of saying that there must be something in place on how they want to work this out. The rest of the amendment really talks about unrequested leave and gives those exemptions immediately to the principals to say that they can look at some of the individual areas and use those immediately to say that they are going to say that that's not part of ULA. So like Montessori, language immersion, things like that, where they would have some ability to say that those are an area of certification or of a skill set that they need to have protected within their school that would not be based on the seniority model. So pretty simple amendment. Would like to, you know, kind of have a discussion on it, see where the author's at on it, as well as members.
Thank you, Representative Kath. Representative Kath, just to remind you, has moved the A18 amendment. Let's have discussion, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kath. Thank you also for taking the time, a lot of time, quite frankly, outside of the committee hearing to talk about your ideas. I think the amendment is good. I would say that generally the amendment just doesn't accomplish the core goal of what my bill is trying to accomplish. Not to say that the bill, not to say that the amendment doesn't do some good things, and it does. I think the one hang-up that we have, and we've talked about it, Representative Kath, is that the A18 amendment doesn't specifically cite Subdivision 8, the statute related to teacher evaluations. And without that linkage to the current evaluation law, you really have something that's not based on performance as it relates to student learning in the classroom. You just have some licensure exceptions. And while I think those licensure exceptions have merit, I just think that the scope of the bill that we're trying to promote here has students at the core and student achievement at the core of it. And I think it's, in my estimation, it's impossible to get there without citing the evaluation law. But I appreciate, Representative Kath, again, all of the time that you've spent, time that, quite frankly, you didn't have to spend working with me on the issue, and I really appreciate it.
Further questions, Representative Kath?
Yeah, and I for members, I hope that you would recognize the largest difference that you're noting here, and that does come under, and Representative Peterson, I'm thankful that you bring it up, is that it is delinked from the actual evaluation tool. And what it does is, I think it takes that first initial step that is really critical in any sort of evaluation system when you're first putting it forward, is to say that that next step is, how would that tool be used? And in this situation, what it's saying is that, yes, the teachers and the school board can no longer be silent on ULA. And in other words, that have that fall or that backstop on seniority only. What it forces is the conversation. And I think that's the first thing that we need to recognize, is that it's that, you know, whether you want to call it a carrot or a stick approach, whatever. But for me, it's that those local negotiated plans are oftentimes better than what a state legislature could ever do. In the sense, when we looked at QCOM, for instance, and you start to see how schools have started to utilize that program with parameters, but then started to initiate that within their districts, and now have just gone crazy with it of new staff development, new methodology of evaluation and such, that is really the approach that I would like us to take. And that's what I've talked with Representative Peterson about, is that step forward, I think, is first of all saying that no longer can you just use the backstop. Now you need to actually negotiate a plan and say, how would your district answer this question? What do you think is fair in ULA? And we have to keep in mind that the teachers are going to be first-year teachers through 34-year, 40 years, who knows how many years they'll be there. All those teachers will be present at the table, as well as the principals, the superintendent, and I would hope that the school board would be very engaged in this, as it is something that that they have wanted. So that's the goal of the amendment here, is to say, let's not put the cart before the horse. Let's first start to get these districts going on this and negotiating this plan, and then from there, as the tool comes forward and we know what that evaluation model would be, then we can maybe put some further parameters if we do not like where these ULA agreements are headed. But not for us to assume that they would not head in the right direction. But I know we've had a conversation with that about that, and I don't want to stop the conversation from happening on this, but I have said that I would pull the amendment today in just respect to the author, because it is a delete everything amendment to allow, you know, work on his bill to move forward, and I believe I have word from you that we will continue to work on this before it hits the House floor.
Absolutely.
Representative Kath withdraws the A18 amendment. Further discussion? Because we're now back on the amended 1870.
All right. The Representative Peterson. So we're finally to the bill here. It's exciting. So, and I do want to point out again, the A18 amendment is just to say one more thing about that. I think is the closest that, you know, the two, if you will, opposing sides have come to reaching some agreement. We both agree the district's got to collaborate with the local bargaining unit. We both believe that, have the recognition that the seniority mandate deserves scrutiny at the local level. We just differ on the statutory citation, statutory requirement to base it on the evaluation law, and I think that's a significant difference, but I think it's a promising start. So the to the bill, House File 1870, the DE.
Representative Peterson B, I think Representative Peterson S had a question.
Oh.
Go ahead, Representative.
Yes, Madam Chair. I just wondered, you know, I do see that if this bill, as Representative Peterson plans to pass tonight, goes forward, I see a lot of additional money being needed by every district, probably, because I see potential litigation all over this bill, and grievances and arbitrations and all the rest of the pieces that go with what is really pretty, at this point, unfair when we don't have a process in place with the actual language about what an evaluation will look like. And so, and also issues around data privacy that aren't resolved, a lot of things in the bill that still have to be resolved. So my question is this going to go to finance? Is there a fiscal note on it, is what I'm
asking. No, there's not a fiscal note on it, and Representative Peterson did change his motion, so it's going to the floor.
And I suppose we can't move to send it. I think there should be a fiscal note, but Madam Chair, because I do think
members, Representative Garofalo has told me he is not interested in seeing it, so I will agree with him. Yes, go ahead, Representative
Madam
Peterson
Chair,
B.
To the extent that there is litigation on the bill, you know, that's pure speculation. Nobody can guarantee that. However, the teacher evaluation law is a separate issue. You know, litigation related to the teacher evaluation law may or may not happen. As far as preempting the work of the working group or risking additional litigation because we're acting on this bill today, again, I'll remind the committee the effective date for replacement of the statewide ULA standard is after a full year, actually full 2 years after the implementation of the evaluation framework. So I think that's important to know.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to, you know, before we get to the point where we're about to vote, you know, I've been watching this discussion, and I was hopeful that the author of the bill might have been willing to integrate the CAF's amendment because I would have been able to support the bill because, as Representative Kath has said, one of the problems I've had also with it is that this House File 1870 just seems to be coming before we've allowed the process that was established in the last session to work its will. And the second part that I have difficulty with is, again, it seems that the legislature is interjecting itself and its opinion into activities of local school boards. And I've noticed this is a problem in the legislature, not only in education, but across the board. There's a constant notion, it seems, that the legislature knows all, and that local communities, local school boards that citizens elect somehow can't quite be trusted, that we seem to know more than they. And so for those specific reasons, I'm going to have a difficulty supporting the bill, and that's unfortunate, I think, because we do need to move to a better evaluation system. And years that I spent in my local union, I knew there were individuals who needed in a humane way to be moved on and out of the profession so that we could hang on to not just younger people, but others who had decided that education should be their passion as well as their profession. So I'm uncomfortable that we're moving in this direction, because I'm pretty sure, especially from the letter from the Commissioner of Education, that the bill as it's written now will not be accepted by the governor. And too much of the time in a legislature, I feel, is being spent in a contest of wills between the two political parties, or between the legislature and the governor. I think there would have been an opportunity for the governor to move to a compromise with this legislation if the Cath Amendment had been accepted. So again, year after year, as I spend my time in the legislature, I see opportunities being lost. And I'm not going to suggest it's necessarily always political motivations, but I think it's a lack of willingness to listen to both sides more carefully and to be more collaborative. So it's disappointing. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Peterson B.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Benson. And there's a few points that you raised there, and I think some of them are pretty substantive. The first of which, and it was something that we addressed earlier in the committee, was the preemption of the evaluation working group, which has been raised, I think, by just about every member, and it's a valid concern, so I don't blame you all for raising it. There's two very important points to keep in mind. The full-blown implementation date of House File 1870 does not take effect until after that point, and then secondarily, and I think maybe a more important point, is that current law, the seniority mandate, the indiscriminate layoff of teachers, is in any case, in any outcome of the evaluation working group, incompatible with whatever they decide. It will always undermine the work of the evaluation working group. And so the question is that, you know, the legislature collaborated with the administration to pass a law last session as it relates to teacher evaluations. And the question is, are we going to allow statute to remain in place that we know full well will undermine the very statute that we passed into law last session? I don't think that is a good policy. I think it's counterintuitive. I think it's in some sense illogical. If the mission of signing the teacher evaluation law into place was, number one, to support the professional development of teachers, and number two, to inform critical personnel decisions at the local district level, then the ULA mandate as it currently exists is entirely incompatible with that. It cannot coexist. In one of the most critical personnel decisions a teacher will face in their entire career, we will not base it on something that was, in fact, a somewhat bipartisan agreement, at least in terms of the branches of government. And we are going to deem that entirely irrelevant in that process. And I just don't understand why we would leave a piece of statute in place that does that. As far as the local control piece, while it is true that after the full-blown effectiveness date, districts must comply with the language in the bill, the language in the bill is directly tied to the teacher evaluation law. And if you're familiar with the teacher evaluation law, you know that the evaluation framework itself can be negotiated between local school boards and local bargaining units. So absolutely, local bargaining units and school boards will absolutely have a say in the outcomes and in the measures that are going to be used in this process. And as far as quote about, you know, the contest of wills, if you will, and the lack of listening to the other side and all of that, and, you know, that's, you know, obviously, Representative Benson, if that's your opinion, I think it's unfortunate. You know, I think the outcome of this committee may be such that we have two differing opinions, but I don't think that necessarily means that I didn't listen to people's opinion. I don't think that I automatically have to adopt something that someone, an opposing viewpoint, brings forward or otherwise be deemed, you know, an unreasonable, you know, person of the committee. And, you know, quite honestly, I spent most of the first hearing here, as you know, discussing amendments that me and you had talked about the previous day. In fact, the majority of the first committee hearing that we had today were discussing amendments that you yourself had agreed upon. So, I do take some, I do object to that slightly. So hopefully that addresses your three points that you made.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Members, in regard to the waiver plan, it states that priority and focus schools cannot keep ineffective teachers in their classrooms, and that would be my support for moving ahead with House File 1870, because once the waiver plan kicks in and eventually teacher principal evaluation first, teacher evaluation second, there has to be something in place, and because there's going to be sort of a pilot of the pilot as they review local plans, I think it's essential that we be discussing very seriously a plan that, I see as a framework, and the actual work is going to be done at the local level between the school board and the bargaining unit. I think that we're at a crossroads and need to seriously consider our students who are going to be in these focus and priority schools desperately needing to make gains and reach proficiency. So I you know, from my perspective, this is urgent.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry I have my back to you. It's hard to look at both folks. I would agree that there is an urgency, and the waiver does create that urgency. I would question whether we shouldn't learn from what's going to happen in these pilot programs that will be evaluated as the evaluation tool rolls out before we make this change at the state level. I'm very appreciative of the work that's been done in this area. As a school board member, I know a lot of folks on around the table have either served on school boards or are teachers, and so there's a lot of, you know, different perspectives here. Mine was 8 years on the school board. I do know there's interest in the communities in making certain, and as a parent myself, I had the same concern that the teacher that's in front of my student is excellent. And, you know, as we heard earlier from Education Minnesota, and as I felt as a parent, and as I heard as a school board member, those that are not effective need to be removed. I don't think there's a disagreement, and I think you have some interesting ideas in here. I will say this morning we talked a little bit about, or you asked the question, you hadn't had a chance to talk to some of the rural superintendents, and I did have that opportunity. I've had that opportunity twice in the last month to have, you know, 15 or so superintendents in the room, and then this last weekend about the same amount. And I will tell you, they too are interested in the concept. But they are more concerned with the evaluation tool, what it will look like, how it will impact their ability to be. The superintendents are worried about the principal's ability to do the evaluations with no extra resources. I think in addition to that, this issue that was raised about the three-year-old evaluation being the last, you know, record as a means of removing a teacher with ULA is maybe not such a good idea. I do hope you spend a little bit more time thinking about that, because I think that could be very unfair to teachers. I think the superintendents raised some of those issues. And like me, I'm interested in changing, perhaps, how we make these decisions about ULA. I think last year's bill was a nice start, but there's a lot that needs to be worked out in that evaluation tool, and everybody's apprehensive about it. And you know, the way the legislative process works, there is an urgency that you feel because you never know if you'll be here tomorrow, and this is something you feel passionately about. We all do, and you want to get your thoughts and your ideas passed while you're here, and I respect that. But I also would ask that perhaps you, as you move ahead, that you think very carefully, not just about passing a bill because of that urgency, but about making sure that we have the pilots worked on, that we let the evaluation tool play itself out, and maybe trust that the next legislature, if this doesn't pass, also wants what's best for kids. We all do. And that if this doesn't pass, it's not. It doesn't mean that it's not going to, some iteration of it is not going to pass. We all want, including the unions, the best teachers for our kids. So, again, the local control issue, as Representative Kath passed, is something I hope you'll also consider. Those decisions should be made locally. They know their teachers. They know the best. They'll make the best choice for their individual districts. So I'm struggling with this because I think we're moving in the right direction with some of this, but I don't think it's there yet, and I don't think this is the year to do it. So thanks for your work, and I'll be watching.
To allay some of the concerns that were expressed this morning, I want to remind you that in the legislation we passed last year for teacher evaluation, it does read at least one summative evaluation. So the number of summative evaluations could be numerous. That will be something decided as the locals prepare their evaluation plans. And I believe that if the commissioner is reading this the same way I am, that they will include that also in the default. Representative Dorton.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate it. But I will say, you know, in what the rural superintendents felt, without some additional funds, they just really question whether they personally are going to have the time to evaluate 30 or 40 teachers annually or semi-annually without additional resources or without additional person they could hire to help do that. So I did just want to share that because that question came up earlier. The superintendents and the principals are concerned.
Thank you. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, Representative Peterson, I just want to say thank you so much. I really applaud you for your efforts to work in a bipartisan way. There have been many amendments that have come to you, and you have really been open to accept and integrate those amendments into your bill. So I just want to say thank you for that. That doesn't always happen. It has not always happened, and you have had extremely totally amount of patience and in this process. So thank you for that. But in saying that, I would be really remiss if I didn't state some of the things that I feel needs to be said at this moment. And I do agree with many Representative Benson over there in this whole total process. We have had many, many questions come up that has been talked about around the evaluation tool process, the evaluation tool that's in the process that happened with the legislation that was passed before that you brought to the table that was a bipartisan bill. But this here, just listening to the testimony for the last day, here we are again, there's more questions than answers. There's more uncertainties than certainties. And for me, it's just really hard to pass on a bill to become law when there's so much uncertainty within this bill on the impact and the outcomes it would really have for our children. And let me just state, along with me, it's hugely important that we have effective teachers in the classroom, as I believe it is for everyone that's around this table. It is hugely effective. And I know just from listening to the members from my party that they want every child to be successful. And that is the goal, for every child to be successful. But for me, as I look to this bill and evaluating teachers with a tool that's not yet quite in place, but we want, as I heard so many times before, put the cart before the horse. Right. And maybe we're up in the cart before the horse. We don't quite know yet what the evaluation tool will look like. So we're making a lot of assumptions about what may happen and what may not happen. But as a person who believes so much in looking at evidence-based, looking at the impacts, looking at the outcomes, you know, I really believe it's really, really important that as we look at mandates and how we're going to implement your bill, that it must be funded. We have to look at the impact of teachers who have been evaluating without some kind of structure in place, what the impact that will have on local schools and districts. But also, I think we need to look at how we're going to really work towards closing this achievement gap. You know, what did that look for kids of color, for the kids that I believe you guys all are saying we want to help support? You know, we have to invest in education. We just must. We must fund education. We must look at early childhood programs. We know, as evidence tell us, that that would support our efforts. You know, smaller classroom, extended days, after-school programs, things that we know that will help support kids of color in the classroom. I would hate to see that the results is that we can't fund our schools, so we're laying off teachers, and we have to make these hard decisions around seniorities or who is the most effective, who is the least effective, you know, making decisions around, well, two teachers who are effective, but one has to go. I just truly believe that we need to find a way that we can invest in our kids' education so that we can have a better tomorrow. And again, look at some of these other initiatives that I talked about and how we can implement that so that our kids are successful in school.
Representative Peterson, B.
Thank you for that, Representative Moran. I think there's a number of points that you raise in there. Certainly there are questions around the bill, without a doubt. One thing that is certain that I have no uncertainty about is that the current system lays off effective teachers consistently. That is a fact. Indiscriminate layoffs of teachers who have positive impacts on students' lives in the inner city and in every city. So, that is one thing that I am certain of, and I'm also certain that it has a disproportionate impact on the kids of color that you mentioned, and I understand that we all care about those kids and all kids, and there are some there's a lot of research around the disproportionate impact on minority students in this policy. In particular, our cities of the first class. And in terms of the ULA standards, I agree, you know, ULA inherently is unfortunate. We're not proposing a policy here that is a proactive policy, and I'm not pretending that this is the silver bullet or that this is single-handedly going to turn around the achievement gap. All of those things are... This is one part of a comprehensive approach that needs to be taken. And anybody who pretends like LIFO is going to bring about the change that we need in public education is kidding themselves. But nonetheless, quality blind layoffs, seniority-based layoffs, is incompatible with a system that places student achievement first. And I think that, you know, fundamentally there's a decision that has to be made about which priority is the most important priority. You can't have two number one priorities. Your number one priority has to either be that student achievement is the most important factor in making these decisions, or seniority is. And the current law is very clear that seniority is not only the priority, it is the only criteria. And I will mention on ULA, lack of funding is not the only way that this process comes about. In fact, very often declining enrollment can lead to the ULA process. Merger of schools or consolidation of districts can also lead to the ULA process. So we're not simply talking about one particular instance where, you know, there was a lack of funding, although, you know, all three of those happen, unfortunately, at times. Certainly, there are concerns, and I don't pretend for a minute that there aren't concerns, and some have merit. I'm more concerned with the detrimental impact of quality blind layoffs on students that need great teachers. That's I place that as my number one concern, and... So that's what I have to say in regards to your comments. But I appreciate your kind words.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And unfortunately, most of my comments, or maybe fortunately, you've put more eloquently, Representative Peterson. I think you have done a remarkable job here in reaching out to the different stakeholders on this issue, which is a very volatile issue, and it is one that people have very strong passions about. So I'm going to give you a ton of credit for that. I am very impressed with the way you've done that with this bill. And I'm going to shorten my remarks because most of what I wanted to talk about you have, again, said more eloquently than I could have. Other than the fact that what I like best about this bill is that it really does treat our teachers as professionals. They aren't makers of Model A Fords who are doing the same thing over and over and over. Our most effective teachers are the ones that are innovative, that are out there doing things differently. And sometimes those are very experienced teachers and sometimes they're not. But the fact that current statute makes it illegal to take any other thing into account during these ULAs, I think is really unfortunate for the state and has been a detriment to the public education system in the state of Minnesota. And I appreciate and applaud you for taking that on. And I think this is a very good bill, and I am very happy to support it, and I appreciate you bringing it up.
Thank you, Representative Woodard, because we have been putting all the risk on students for a long time, so we've got to move away from the status quo. Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things that I guess I've learned around the negotiations table, when you have passion on both sides, I have to admit this morning some of your words were very upsetting to me, because what ends up happening, Representative Peterson, is that your assumptions that you make on things regarding your bill work out. Student achievement, it's for the better. Other people's assumptions are called speculation. Or, like if someone says, it could cost a lot of money, it could be litigation. Your words are, that's just speculation. Kind of like minimizing their point of view, minimizing their concerns. Now, the more I get to know you, the more I see you tonight, the more you are more open to that, saying, I guess I see some other points of view, and I do that, and that's been helpful to me. But there are definite unintended consequences in this legislation that are going to affect the whole system. Lack of money to fund a system affects student achievement, don't you think? I mean, I would think so. So those kinds of things happen where if you're looking for a fair system, we owe it to the system to be fair also, just as much as a teacher effectiveness model. Is it fair to have legislation before you have the mechanism in place? Is that really fair? Now, one of the things that kind of bothers me around the negotiations table, as we've done, like I've been on both sides, is being a school board member on one hand and then also a union member on another, on two separate types of contracts. So I've kind of seen both sides of things as we go forward with that. But one of the things that just is a non-starter and just drives me crazy is when people say, well, we're doing it for the students. As if anyone in this room isn't. It's kind of like the assumption is, well, that's the bottom line. That's the arguments are all over. Doesn't matter what anybody says because we're doing it for the students. And when one side says that, the inference is that the other side somehow doesn't measure up to thinking about the students. So I hope that we don't do that to each other. I hope what we do is we assume that people care about the students and really care about the students and how they achieve, and not just have that type of statement come out. And that's what I'm hoping for. I think if someone says that this is the cart before the horse, it should indicate that we need more time with this. And yes, you've put it out, but you're also putting, like you said, a framework in that may drive that particular evaluation group that's supposed to come up with something. You might be targeting parameters in too far, where it they need to come up with these things. And you have to have confidence that people will come up with an evaluation system that will foresee some of this, the seniority piece. And they'll have it better than what we could ever come up with. I think you've alluded to that at times, but I just want to reemphasize that. Another piece that bothers me, and I know last week it was brought up by Representative Benson, and the word that came across was could mischief. I think Mr. Aronson had that comment. Could mischief come about in this type of system? Well, part of me wants to get a definition of what mischief is. I think we kind of know what it is. But mischief can happen, especially when a system is kind of driven on cost by the fact that the experience factor equates to more money. That's the way the system was built, put in place. I asked my colleagues earlier, who put that in place? Because a lot of people out there assume it was teachers that put that in place. I would bet that it was put in place by the people who had to manage it because it was the most fair system at the time. I think it would be a good history lesson to determine how that came about. But I think that when we do the seniority piece and we throw something out, all I'm asking for is that my assumptions that I'm making are just as valuable as your assumptions. And yes, we both have passion, but I do have some fears about that because I feel like mischief can take place. Where does that protect? You know, people that have given their career to teaching have examples of kids coming out of the system that do very well, that have done well in the system, who prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that they're effective. And yet, you know, the comment has been made several times that we need to get younger teachers. We need to get that to happen. But the assumption flips then and makes it sound like the older teachers, or if they are looking at a seniority-based piece, then somehow they're not as effective. And that's what I really want to guard against. And I know you were shaking your head on that comment. And maybe that's just I'm going to have to accept that. But there's always two sides of the coin. There's always two sides of pieces that can make this happen. I'm just hoping that you will see it a little bit more clearly. I wish it wouldn't have to go down the veto path. Because I think that Representative Kath brought up a good compromise for the time being, until things are settled through. Otherwise, my question is, what is the hurry to do it today? And so I just end my thoughts with that.
Representative Peterson, B.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Tilbury. You know, I think humility is important, and I know that I apologized earlier in the committee, and I'll do it again to you personally. If I offended you in any way, I think that in a conversation about policy, both sides make assumptions, right? I mean, we both make assumptions, and it doesn't necessarily mean that I think less of the other person. I just happen to think I'm right, and which is why I'm here today. but I think you know, and we're gonna, you know, we can agree to disagree as far as the comment that was made about, you know, me preferring younger teachers. I've never stated that I prefer younger teachers, older teachers, middle-aged teachers, or any of the above. What I'm concerned with is teachers that have a positive and the most positive impact on student learning. That's what I'm concerned with. I don't care if they're all 70 years old or if they're all 25 years old. I really, truly don't care as long as they're effective at what they do. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, the timing of the issue multiple times. Just to state again, obviously the effective date is after that point, and it doesn't matter. It does not matter what the teacher evaluation working group comes up with, because the seniority mandate undermines it and deems it irrelevant and one of the most significant personnel decisions somebody's going to face. And so why would you leave something, you know, we talked about putting the cart before the horse. You know, I would say that leaving the current law in place is throwing weights on the horse's leg and asking them to run down the road. I mean, it deems the horse a lot less effective at what it does, because it in one of the areas where, if, of all the areas of all the decisions aside from professional development, maybe one of the areas where we absolutely would want to make an informed decision is before we not only affect the students that would potentially be taught by an effective educator, but the educator themselves. I think we owe that to the teacher to say, you know what, you're more than just a cog in this wheel. You're more than just a few years on. And I'm not implying that that's what you think either. But what the seniority mandate does is suggest that that's the most important factor. By deeming all other things illegal, that's what it does. That's the practical effect. And so when I say that student achievement is my most important, is the most important thing to me in making informed decisions on that basis, I'm saying that because the current law says it's not important at all in this instance, in the instance of ULA. That's my point. It's not that I don't believe, if I even need to say it, members of this committee, I hold you all in high regard. I truly believe everyone here that takes the time to do what we do every 2 years, especially in terms of election season, but more than that, the time that we spend, you know, communicating with people, everyone here, I fully believe, is looking out for the best interests of kids, and we have different ideas on how to get there. So that's what I believe. I give you all that much credit. It doesn't mean I always agree, and it doesn't mean that I always assume that my, you know, my idea about the way things ought to be is the best, and that's, you know, that's just a matter of opinion, I guess. The seniority mandate is what deems everything else less important. It's not my assumption that student achievement is ought to be a critical factor in that decision-making process.
Representative Tilbury.
Yeah. Only one follow-up.
Sure.
And I know that you were joking when you said it. Well, I'm right.
A critical factor in that decision-making process.
Representative Tilbury.
Yeah. Only one follow-up.
Sure.
And I know that you were joking when you said it. Well, I'm right. You know, I know that. But, you know, if people don't know you, that comes off as, you know, my plan is right. I am going to push it through. I am going to do this because my plan is right. And that's a hard one. And I just, you know, when you just said, you know, I don't know if I have the best plan, well, I can live with that. I can't live with the other one. It says I'm right.
Madam Chair, you know, I suppose I am a fallible person, and if we're going to parse every statement that I think I've been over backwards to explain my position towards the minority members of this committee, and I'm certainly willing to express that opinion, but you know, I'm not going to, you know, continue to defend myself over every statement that I make.
Representative Kath.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'll just, you know, make this quick, but Representative Woodard, you hit on something that I think is really important, and that is the idea that we want innovation. We want teachers to think outside the box, whether they're young, old, whatever it is. But it reminds me of my second year of teaching when I found out I was going to be teaching American Studies 10. First time. I had been hired to teach political science economics, but I had to teach one section of American Studies 10. So that summer, I spent the entire summer designing curriculum, and I decided that I was going to teach history backwards. So I wanted to get common themes from today's newspaper, and I wanted to say to those kids that here's some common themes that we can all take from the newspaper because we're listening to the news each day. We see it come before us. And I was going to teach it backwards, and we were putting them in these teams, and each team was going to take one of those core standards, and they were going to look at that concept and that theme. And I remember my evaluation that year from my principal. My evaluation was, it is illogical to teach history backwards. Representative Kath, or excuse me, Mr. Kath, needs to work more with his peers on how curriculum should be designed and how you should teach history. Furthermore, Representative Kath should put his desks in rows.
Yep, I bet that.
And I sat there, I was like, are you kidding? And I was a probationary teacher at the time, so I was scared to death. Am I going to be hired for the next year? Members, those evaluations are still happening today. Where I look at it and go, that's innovation. That's an incredible thing. But that principal doesn't see it that way. When school districts consolidate, Representative Peterson, there are going to be different districts consolidating that have different evaluation systems. How will they reconcile that under ULA? Because their evaluation systems will be different, because they won't use the same model. How do we know if there's one principal at one elementary school? Because I have five elementary schools in Owatonna. We have five different principals that are going to evaluate teachers in a different way. I have one principal that says, if you send somebody down to the office on me, that's a ding against you. Whereas others would say, no, I want to know exactly where your students are at, and I want that connection. And those are concerns that I have, because it is subjective in nature. 65% of these evaluations are going to be subjective. And Corey Kath didn't put desks in a row.
Yep.
God darn it. If I, you know what I mean? And that's what's resonating in my head, because I had principal evaluations like this. And I looked at it and I thought I was good. But what I want to say is that as we look at this and as we move forward, because I know we're not done with this. I know I've got that commitment from you that we're going to continue to work on this as it heads to the floor. The idea that the seniority is incompatible with evaluation, it can also be said the other way, that the evaluation model is incompatible with the bill that you are making a statement. And it's because what's already in current law, the evaluation model, presupposes at least one summative every 3 years. And we know a lot of districts ask for that. They said that is a deal breaker if it's more, because we need to make sure that that we have the resources to do these summative evaluations. So that's incompatible with your bill right now, because it might assume that a bill or an evaluation may be 3 years old. It's incompatible with your bill because we have a one-year probationary period right now that says that a teacher that has an ineffective rating has a year to make that up. But how would that work then if a ULA happens within that year that they're in their program to move up the chain of command? It's not a question that's been answered yet. That we already have a plan in evaluation to get rid of ineffective teachers before it ever gets to ULA, or at least that's what I hope the teacher evaluation model would do, is get rid of those teachers even before ULA happens. And I will tell you that the only other thing that I want the committee and the public that listens to this is that there is not a seniority rule. There's not a seniority rule. No district has to just use seniority. It says that they can negotiate anything right now, but the fallback is seniority. You are on the right step in the first paragraph of your bill to say that they just must negotiate what ULA looks like. That is an initial first step to say, you don't get a backstop anymore. No one gets to be silent on this. We need to force the conversation. And that is what I'm hoping here, that we recognize that it's a backstop, but it is not the forced. It's not forced. And when I brought this up to a principal mentor that I've been working with on my principal licensure, he said to me, I told him about this. I said the committee hearing and the people that came before me and everything like that, and the new teachers that were there, the young teachers that were saying, this is just wrong. And he looks at me and he goes, well, how do you know that they were more effective than the other teachers in the building? And I said, well, I know that, but they had really good testimony. No, Corey, how do you know that they were more effective than the other teachers? He goes, thank goodness that teacher evaluation model is going to be proposed next year, because now we as principals will have some of these collaborative efforts and things. But don't just assume, Corey, that those people that came to testify that day were more effective than the other teachers. And that resonated with me, to say that, yeah, I listened to them heartfelt, and I looked at that and said, yeah, I guess you're right. I don't know if they were more effective. And I'm excited for the tool that's going to show that, and then I think that we can move on this type of legislation at a higher level. Thank you.
Representative Woodard, did you have a response to that?
Just a very quick one. And Representative Kath, you're going to make one heck of a principal. but I think you've hit the nail on the head there with the fact it sounds like you had a bad principal. And I believe that this bill kind of helps us identify where we're doing things wrong within the traditional system. Because if that's what your principal evaluated you on, then you're in the wrong school. And that school probably was not a very effective school if they weren't thinking outside the box like that. So I would say, yeah, except for your classroom. I would take your classroom as an exception. So, I mean, this is a great dialogue because this is exactly the kind of reforms that we're looking for, is to allow that to happen, to kind of free our principals and our teachers to do the things that we know are effective. And so I appreciate that story. I think it's a great story.
I want to call him Representative Peterson.
Okay, go.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just two comments. One is that if we had an effective evaluation system in place, which we should have right now, we wouldn't have to worry about the seniority system because every teacher in that school would be effective or should be effective. And if they're not effective, they should be gone. And we could do an orderly seniority if that's what the district chose. I think most districts would choose to deal with the strand issue in a different way. They would probably deal with some of these specific licensure areas in a different way. And I'm going to say thank you to you for dealing with the licensure issue in a way that makes sense. I do appreciate that. and so, you know, this I get frustrated with this because I come from inside the system as a teacher. And I really listen carefully and think, now, how would I feel as a practicing teacher right now with all of this? But I even have some stronger feelings about the principal. I'm not sure that Corey's going to want to be a principal. I look at what's expected of principals under this bill and what we're going to expect in the future. I worked on that principal task force, or work group, as I said, and we are going to expect them to do, well, first of all, to be leaders. They're going to be graded on being a leader. Working with the community, working with discipline, working with professional development, working with summative and professional development forms for all of their teachers. It'd be nice if they could do it every year because I think once in 3 years is really not sufficient, not at all. Things change too much. We're living in a very different world now, and I think once a year isn't sufficient. And certainly if I were going to be laid off, I would want, especially if I was on some kind of variance where I was improving, I'd want to know where am I now and where am I in this whole ladder of that we're constructing. And I do think the bill may confine and put some structures around what what this teacher evaluation group is going to be doing. I am concerned about that. I think they need some freedom to develop that in a way that makes sense for them. But I do have some feelings for the principal, and we did get into the issue of time management. And the principals themselves said, where am I going to get time to do all of these? And then how am I going to be evaluated on all of these issues when I don't have time to do this? Because, of course, the superintendent's going to evaluate me, and then somebody's going to evaluate the superintendent. And so, you know, we get into that whole issue of the principals. It's going to be difficult for them, I think, under what we're putting forth for them. So I just had to throw that in the mix and say, really, seniority makes sense if we had been doing our job all along with not having ineffective teachers in the classroom. We could then do seniority without any problem. This is only on layoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson, I agree. You know, you painted a picture of the ideal where, you know, we're using these things to inform critical personnel decisions. And, you know, obviously that is the ideal. The only part that I disagree with is that we wouldn't have to worry about a section of statute that deems that entire previous statement irrelevant in one of the more critical decisions that would be made in regards to that teacher. You wouldn't keep that, in law if it doesn't take into account the previous values that you mentioned. But I think it's important to get into kind of the conversation that you're having about evaluation, the 3-year evaluation cycle, and we can dig into that that nugget a little bit here. And number one, the teacher evaluation law at if a teacher is deemed effective, Representative Kath correctly pointed out, there's a 12-month remediation period. Last session, we were very careful to provide due process and the ability for teachers to be treated fairly when they're evaluated. In fact, we never made an attempt to shorten the remediation period or the rights of due process for teachers. So at the end of that 12-month period, the administrator will have a decision to make, the competent administrator. And that administrator will decide to either find another opportunity for that teacher within the district or potentially to exit them from the organization. The only instance where a teacher would go 3 years in that scenario is the assumption of an administrator who refuses to act on the authority that they already have as it relates to them being ineffective. Now, I think your more pressing concern is as it relates to the rare instance that an effective teacher, that all the ineffective teachers, however many there were allowed, and there are effective teachers. Now, I believe that's the most unfortunate outcome that you're posing as a potential. And in that instance, keep in mind that all effective teachers would be then based on seniority. So the different, what you're proposing is absolutely, the scenario that you're proposing is absolutely the same as it exists today. So if you're into the effective teaching pool, the secondary criteria is seniority. Mm-hmm. So an effective teacher is not going to be treated any differently than they do under current law. So that's an objection that really doesn't exist. I mean, it exists in the fact that it's true in both cases. It's not a reason to oppose House File 1870 and current in favor of the status quo, because the status quo and House File 1870 treat those two situations equally. They both are based on seniority. So I think that concern is overblown. I think, again, it's important to remember that ULAs are not a proactive measure. They are reactive. They're unfortunate. And that is why, even in House File 1870, we give extra recall. We leave the five-year right of recall privileges to those effective teachers in order to mitigate some of that concern, and actually to give them extra privilege in order for those teachers to be brought back. And if inside of 5 years, most likely they will be. And you can call that speculation if you want, and I won't even take offense to it. But I mean, that's the scenario. So that whole concern about effective teachers potentially being laid off is really one that is in line, frankly, with current statute. I think that's very important to point out.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of things. One is, I'm struck by, I studied history, and I'm struck by, how often in history it's the groups of people that actually agree more than not agree that wind up battling each other the fiercest. And I do think that there is broad agreement in this room around a state and local policy that promotes the most effective teachers. I think the only issue is how do we get there. And I want to come back to that, but I do want to digress a little bit here and say that, I think it's really important for us to be really consistent about our values. And this will be the harshest thing I'll say, but, quite frankly, last year in the majority bill, finance bill that came off before the House, arguably dozens, if not hundreds, of Minneapolis and St. Paul effective teachers were going to get laid off. And, I mean, that was a scale of cuts to those two school districts alone. And so, let's make sure that we're being very consistent about what our values are here relative to our desire to promote effective teachers. I know funding isn't the only issue, but it's certainly one of the issues. I'm not going to concede to the other party that that they're the only ones who are worried about seniority trumping every other intelligent, objective way in which we should be making decisions with teachers. We're not going to concede that point. We are going to firmly say that the issue here, and Representative Kath is correct, you know, that, you know, there have been some misstatements here about seniority being a trumping legal piece out there, and that's not the way it works out in the real world. There are instances where it does work that way, but that is not how it works in the real world. We heard that testimony earlier. What we're going to say is that it's important to get it right. And I would hope that that's what my friends on the other side of the aisle are also going to say, because that's our job here as legislators, to get it right. And this battle among folks who, you know, share this common value is about what is the right way to do it. And you came and visited me today. We did a little bit of, you know, conversing on that, Representative Peterson. I thank you for that. You know, it's how far do we push, at what time, and in what way? And just as we're wrestling with that issue, believe me, the governor's going to wrestle with that issue too. He's got to be able to answer that question. And it's not going to be sufficient, Representative Peterson, for him to reference what happened last year as predetermining what we have to do this year. What he has to answer is, how do we get it right? And I'd be really careful, actually, with the argument about what happened last year, because maybe it's an argument to undo what we did last year, if we're going to produce something wrong here. And so I do want to thank my good friend, Representative Kath, for offering another valid way, and Representative Peterson, I think her way is a valid way as well, but another valid way to do that, and to do it in such a way where you still have a very strong expectation, but you also have this thing called ownership. And I've shared this with you and others, you know, that, you know, passing, I always used to think that passing a law, you know, is the most important thing you do around here. When in fact, it's passing a law that people own, that people breathe life into, our administrators, our teachers, our parents, our communities, that's the real prize here. So I am encouraged that Representative Peterson and Representative Kath, you've got, I think, a good dialogue going on here, and I'm, you know, we're still weeks away before the end of the session, and I hope that that certainly continues. And I don't speak for the governor, but I know if I were the governor, I'd have to answer, you know, the same question, which is, what is the right way to do this and the most effective way to do this? And that's going to be on the top of his mind. So, but let me ask very, very quickly, we don't have a Senate companion to this bill. Can you fill us in a little bit on what's happening?
Representative Peterson B.
Senate File 1690's first hearing will be on Monday. Senator Wolf is carrying the bill.
Very good. Yeah, because, you know, last information I had, we didn't have one, and I'd hate for us to spend a whole lot of time tearing each other apart over something that, you know, you got to have a bill that comes out of both houses.
Well, you know how it is, Carl. So we just lead the way and they follow.
You know, it's true. It's
true. Representative Peterson.
To respond to a couple of Representative Mariani's comments, and I think, Representative Mariani knows that I pretty much seek you out on all the issues that I've worked on personally, and I value your opinion. You mentioned that there is a, that it is not how it works, quote unquote, when it comes to the seniority mandate. That is in fact not required, and that's a true statement. It is not required. There is a possibility that you could have a negotiated agreement, and there are other negotiated agreements in the state of Minnesota. I do not know of one negotiated agreement, that includes anything but specialty licensure fields, Montessori language. Those are exceptions that make sense. I think they're good exceptions to the rule. But the piece that I'm most concerned about, and the piece that I'm unaware of in terms of the number of districts, if any, that actually make tangible connections between teacher evaluations and student outcomes in the class. And that's one position that I hold very high on my list of priorities. And then secondarily, for the districts that don't, and I addressed this in amendment earlier today on the other side, in that the current seniority mandate creates an incentive for those bargaining units who prefer that law to simply not negotiate, and by default, the current law or the state mandate takes effect. So if the bargaining unit decides, well, we don't like what the school board is going to try to do, or we don't want to, we for some for whatever reason, and it may be, you know, there may be valid reasons, we don't want to do that, and they prefer the seniority mandate, all they have to do is not act. They're not compelled to act. The language is permissive. It says may. It does not say must. And so that creates, in my opinion, a perverse incentive, much like, in fact, my original language did on the other side of the coin, where I said they may negotiate, the bargaining units and school boards may negotiate, and absent action, the school board would be able to make a unilateral decision. I decided that that also was not the right approach, and in fact, I said only in instances where they opt out of the seniority mandate is that a must. So if you opt out, it must be in a collaborative environment between the bargaining unit and the district. So while I agree that you're technically accurate, that it is true that districts can negotiate alternate terms to the seniority mandate, every single one of them that I know of has to do with licensure fields. And I think what we're trying to get after is making that tangible connection, referencing Subdivision 8 in particular. In terms of, you know, the governor, I think the governor, frankly, made it clear to me early in session that I ought not speculate on what his intentions are going to be, and so I won't. I know that many members of the committee have taken the liberty to speculate on what he's going to do, and, you know, I look forward to working with the governor. I think, you know, the one conversation we had, that I'll just say was constructive, and I'll leave it at that. And I'm hopeful that we can come to some kind of conclusion. And as Representative Kaff mentioned, I'm open to working with him. And in terms of ownership, I think you're absolutely right. I think ownership, you know, you cannot legislate ownership of just by decree, by law. And I think you're absolutely right. But on that note, the seniority mandate does not create any ownership in a teacher's performance. And in fact, it divorces a teacher from ownership in their own performance. Now, I'm not saying that teachers take that attitude. What I'm saying is that that law creates no ownership in the performance that they have in the classroom. In fact, it encourages them to simply, you know, exist, to self-perpetuate. I'm not saying that that's what teachers are doing, and I hope that you don't think that. But I would say that the current seniority mandate encourages a lack of ownership and performance in the classroom by saying that informing one of these critical decisions is divorced of the notion of performance. But I do think that is important, and I think you raised some valuable points.
Representative Benson.
Well, thank you, ma'am. And this will be, you know, not real long because we needn't go over the same material all the time. Although I am tempted to regale the committee on teacher evaluations. Unlike you, I had an evaluation in which the principal said that I was not a progressive teacher because I thought there ought to be any desks anywhere or any walls. That those were all passe. I was to sit on the floor, and so were all my senior high students to sit on the floor. And we didn't need walls anymore. And as the movie theaters, you know, are going in three rooms, or what used to be three rooms on each side, and they were all dark and we were light, and I was told to be quiet because the kids couldn't hear the movie in the other room. Crazy things really do happen in public education, let me tell you. And they're all called reforms and progressivism. But anyway, my...
Amendment, Representative Benson?
Let's put an amendment that can be no walls. It'll cut down the costs. But here's the issue for me. And you mentioned that... We need to have something that we cannot continue with the present system. And so my question to you, and it's kind of a segue from what Representative Mariani was talking about, with these amendments that you have been adding, obviously with an attempt to try to satisfy some of the concerns we have, you took my three and integrate them. That was a nice thing for you to have done. Have you gone back to the Commissioner of Education's office and visited with her or her designees now that you've made these changes, and have you come to any understanding with them? And the reason I ask that is because you indicated that we ought not just to sit here and spin our wheels, that we shouldn't just put it off. But if the governor vetoes it, as Governor Plenty vetoed many of the bills that we had passed on to him when we were in the majority, the result was nothing got done. We didn't get to move forward. So even if your bill is passed out of the House and in the Senate, and you go through the conference committee, and then it goes to the governor, and the commissioner tells him, no, this is not acceptable, and he vetoes it, we've lost our opportunity again. So my suggestion is that you get a hold of the Department of Education and see if you can't visit with the commissioner or her designee and get a clear understanding as to whether the bill you have crafted has any chance of ever becoming law. Because otherwise, this is just a waste of time for all of us, and more importantly, it's a lost opportunity for the children and those school districts to move on this issue of quality teacher evaluation when they have to face, you know, layoffs because of declining enrollment or lack of funding or so. So that's the issue with me. I'm just going to not worry about all the other arguments right now. The question is, are you doing what is necessary to work with the department in order to actually make this become a law?
Representative Peterson B.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, yes, I believe I'm doing everything that I can possibly do to reach out to the department. I think Assistant Commissioner is here, and she could testify to the fact that Mr. McHenry is here, testify to the fact that I've made multiple requests to discuss the issue personally with the commissioner. In fact, many of you received the letter from the commissioner. This was the first direct piece of communication that I received today from the commissioner. So obviously, you know, I've had limited amount of time to react and reply back to the commissioner. I think, you know, obviously there are a number, you know, and again, I'm not going to speculate on the odds of the bill passing or, you know, what the outcome is going to be as it relates to the commissioner's decision-making process. I've called the governor's office numerous times. You wouldn't, you probably, maybe an embarrassingly too much, you know, amount of times probably, but, the commissioner, I think I have an open invitation. I don't know if you guys want to testify to that, the fact that I've said that, but, I don't think that's necessary. So, yes, the short answer is yes.
Well, can I, Madam?
Representative Benson.
If I can just suggest between now and the time this makes it to, you know, conference committee and it goes for the final vote in the House and Senate, that you are able to tell us, your colleagues, that yes, you have a bill which is viable, which will become law because the governor has agreed to sign it. I think that's your job.
I would agree, Representative Benson, that, you know, that would be great. I'm doing the best I can. I can't guarantee what the governor is going to do or the commissioner is going to do. I can only do my best to convince them otherwise.
Well, it might mean you.
I don't know if the commissioner or governor is interested in making a prior commitment prior to a bill being submitted to them. I mean, there's the process much better than I do. You know the conference committee process. You know the process on the floor. Things can change between now and then. All I can control is what I can control, Representative Benson. And I can control my effort to collaborate with the administration.
Yeah.
I can control my effort to collaborate with the members of this committee. And as a rank-and-file member, I can do what I can to control the process, which, as you know, is somewhat outside of my control.
Well, good old John Adams.
Representative Benson.
Thank you. Good old John Adams, who was, you know, member of the Federalist Party, of which I'm still a member, he said there are three rules of a democracy to make it succeed, and that is compromise, compromise, compromise. So I suggest you find a way to compromise more with the administration so all of us can get a bill that becomes law and we can deal with this issue that is a significant issue. And I do compliment you on bringing this issue forward because it is a problem that's been around for years and years and years and years, and we need to move off that dime. But unless you're willing to compromise sufficiently, and they are willing to compromise sufficiently, we're going to be in the same boat we've always been, which is nothing ever happens.
I agree. And, you know, at the end of the day, compromise is going to be necessary. Whether or not they agree with me or I agree with them in the final analysis, you know, obviously, and you know, I can't guarantee that. I mean, I can't guarantee that there's going to be an agreement. It depends on the outcome of the interactions between me and them. In terms of doing it before a bill is sent to the floor, I'm not sure that's even something that is typically done. But we're going to pass the bill, and one thing that I would invite that would be helpful since we're talking about it is if you recall last year. There was actually a department-supported teacher evaluation bill. They made a public statement as to specific language that they did support. And I think it's important for all of us, including the administration, to not only oppose something, but to support a position as it relates, or to simply say, we don't support any reform. So if the department has language that they would like to support, and even if it's exactly the language that Representative Kath brought forward, and I suppose he may have had that conversation, he's a bright guy, and he usually has his P's and Q's in order. If that's the starting point, that would be information that would be a critical first step in me understanding where the administration and department is coming from. But I just want to be clear for those administration officials that are here, I have not assumed anything from any of the heads of your organization. So just a disclaimer there, and I'm not going to do that. So it doesn't matter how many times you ask me, I'm not going to do that.
Thank you, Representative Peterson B. I have a question for you, Representative Kath. Considering the fact that your A18 amendment was my bill from last year, my House File 768, did you run that by the governor? Did you run that by the commissioner?
No. So thank you, Madam Chair. It's all about working bipartisanly, and I think we need to start at our own table first before I can go to the bigger one.
And Representative Benson, I just want to tell you that all sorts of surprises can occur. Just ask me. I negotiated with the governor personally for what we got out of a special session, and I can tell you there were surprises all over the place. And I was delighted. So we shall see. Representative Peterson S.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had one question that I would like to ask before we vote on this, and it hasn't been discussed before, but I noted in the St. Paul contract, at least in the newspaper, and I know Minneapolis has had this process in place, and many of our QCOMP districts have a process in place for peer review and peer assistance and peer review, actually helping with defining whether a teacher is highly qualified or effective. How do you see that working with your bill?
Representative Peterson B.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, in the teacher evaluation bill, that peer review is cited as one of the elements that may be used in the evaluation process.
Yes.
It is cited in here?
Yes.
You're talking about the evaluation law, and that would be under Subdivision 8, which we don't have in front of us. This is related to specifically negotiated and unrequested leaves of absence.
Well, Representative Peterson S.
Well, Madam Chair, I am talking about people in terms of unrequested leave of absence because the evaluation and peer review could affect whether a teacher is put on unrequested leave of absence because they may be part and parcel of that decision making.
Yeah, no.
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, you're right. It does affect it. It's just under a different section of law. It's not the section of law that we're taking up here today. That's under the teacher evaluation law that we passed last session. But it is cited in there specifically. Peer review is one of the items.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll have to go back and read the law again.
Representative Depke, did you have something you wanted to say since I shut you off earlier?
Well,
my co-chair, I'm sorry.
No. It was really not important, except that I really enjoyed the dialogue with Representative Kath and Representative Peterson. And I felt badly about what happened to you at that school, and I just want to, I always think,
I'm on year 12, I'm fine, everything's going to be okay, my mom said it's okay.
But now, you know, I don't want to be wasting time,
long gone.
I had the privilege of going to the Milken Awards, and our Commissioner of Education presented the award. It was at Wayzata Junior High, and the Milken Award winner was in my daughter's school, and an eighth grade teacher came in to teach math, and I'll tell you how he teaches math. He got these rolling, you know, old television things that they don't use anymore, and he got a grant from Apple, and these kids sit in the room, they roll around on these things, and he puts them in groups, and those kids are superstars, and every kid in the school wanted to be in his class, and he's a Milken Award winner, and he's been teaching for 6 years, and I was grateful as all get out that he was not let go, you know, so probably could have been a Milken Award winner if you'd been able to do what you wanted to do, except you had to put your desks in straight rows. So that was all I wanted to say.
I always liked all my principals and respected them greatly. And we didn't agree on everything, but you know, I thought they were very fair, and we worked very collegially. So, closing remarks, Representative Peterson.
Well, I don't know if there's much more that needs to be said that hasn't been said already. I think the committee understands the intention of the bill. I think we all have the same end goal. I just believe fundamentally that the seniority, the current law as it relates to the ULA and the seniority mandate is frankly counter to, I think, the professed values of this committee and the Education Finance Committee and everyone who supports education. The idea that you would simply ignore student outcomes in a critical decision as it relates to teachers is not only a policy that is negatively impacts teachers, it of course negatively impacts students. So with that being said, I urge a yes vote.
Thank you, Representative Peterson, and thanks for all your hard work and to all members for engaging in this. This was very interesting, especially to me, since I've been out of the classroom about 10 years and can reflect on all of this from a different perspective. So with that, we'll take the vote I'll renew my motion that House File 1870 as amended be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign.
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the general register. Thank you very much, members. See you next week. Meeting adjourned.